far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster.
Is in Indianapolis. It is day two of our National Football League Combine shows, courtesy of Whiting Clinic LASIK and Cataract. Good morning. I'm Paul Allen, joined by Paul Charchian and Ben Lieber. They are part of the Timber Tech set list today, which includes Greg Cosell from NFL Films in segment two. Former Vikings offensive coordinator Norv Turner joins today's show. Likewise for former Vikings special teams demon and a current Buffalo Bills special teams coordinator Heath Farwell. Vikings general manager Rick Spielman joins in the neighborhood of 10:55, and we begin the show with Ms. Courtney Cronin from ESPN and ESPN.com, covers the Minnesota Vikings in second and unfashion for said entities, and via Twitter she is at Courtney R. Cronin. How's the rat race?
It's good. I mean, that list of people that you just set up on this show and throwing me in there, wow.
It's pretty good.
It's pretty good. I'm glad I'm kicking it off this morning.
Well, to be clear, if you don't rock like the first 3 minutes, you're out.
Yeah,
so
the clock is ticking.
Yeah.
Yeah, yesterday we had Mike Zimmer on the show for a couple of segments, Giants head coach Pat Shurmur, and you know, and you probably noticed this from a beat writing standpoint or journalistic standpoint, specifically after hours, is everybody will let their proverbial guard down a little more here. You know, obviously without completely oversharing, but the fine line for the between the job interview part of it and the Mardi Gras part of it, walking that fine line is what makes it fun.
I read that article. Who phrased it like that? Is he on The Athletic?
I don't know.
The Mardi Gras part and the job interview, half and half. That's what this is. I mean, this is, as you said, it's survival and trying to get through the week. But yeah, it's nice to see coaches, GMs, you know, people, said entities like that in relaxed fashion, because we just don't get to see it that often.
When Mike Zimmer yesterday via his press conference shared the team may explore a kicking coach, what was your reaction?
I think that idea had been explored beforehand, you know, earlier, even when Mike Prefer was still a special teams coordinator. Yeah. And I'm not surprised. I think that there's, for a team that's had so many issues with the kicking game and with its kickers itself, you know, you're trying to find solutions. And I know that, you know, he's obviously got connections, Mike Zimmer has connections to the Ravens and their special teams coordinators. So, you know, they have a kicking coach. That's an option he might want to explore. And so I wouldn't be surprised if, I think he said by phase one, two, or three of OTAs, that's not necessarily something you have to hire right now, but it's a good thing you'd want to get in there before training camp.
Yeah.
Is that something that, from what you've understand, is that is the kicking coach there at practice, or is it just more off to the side, privately with the kicker, working on the swing, and then them sort of implementing it in practice? You know, how would that work with a swing coach basically being on the sidelines with the special teams coach?
Right. I don't know. I think that that's a dynamic they'd have to explore, because it's a specialization coach. It's somebody who, you know, he said it wasn't as much the psychological aspect. It's just the
mechanical part of the swing.
Yeah, he's somebody who's literally watching that you could be like a quarter of an inch off, and nobody else would probably see that, but the kicking coach could, you know, dissect into that and be like, okay, let's, you know, change your technique, let's work on things like that. And to me, I think that that's, you know, a benefit for, you know, any team to have a specialized coach for a position that, you know, is so critical. And what Mike Zimmer was saying yesterday, just, you know, those moments haunt him. The three field goals missed in Green Bay haunt him. Blair Walsh is 27.
I'm traumatized.
Yeah. And I get it. I mean, as you reflect on the season and you try to move forward, you're going to look at everything. And if there's one thing that keeps coming back up, that keeps haunting you, I mean, you're going to address it.
Well, that's, you know, the difference in two losses, and our kickers potentially cost us two games, I think. That's, you know, when you're a 10-win team, you know, all of a sudden, your whole outlook on your season just changed, as opposed to an 8-win team, which feels like a failure. So, for sure. The specialist that I want to see this team hire, and I swear I'm completely alone in this, and I don't care.
You got a specialist take?
Yes. Okay. I want an in-game situational specialist. The Rams have one. Other teams have them. It's somebody that always knows what you should be doing by the percentages in all of the key situations that happen, especially when you don't have the luxury of a lot of time between plays, under 2 minutes, clocks moving.
Oh, so Jed Fish's job, what you were saying with what the Rams have?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
I remember talking to Sean McVay about that, asking him about having a clock management specialist.
Correct.
And I know that Adam Zimmer had filled that role. You know, that's kind of his role up in the booth on game day. But
I want somebody who only does that.
I know. I think the Rams are so much, they're just like light years ahead in thinking. We didn't have that guy.
Yes. And it's not, and it isn't just things like, should I kick a field goal here? It should be, should we accept this penalty, you know, at this part of the field? Should we go for it on fourth in this part of the field? What are all the odds? And, you know, you work with your coaching staff all off season, so you know what, you know what all of these situations should look like and how the coaching staff will generally want to act. So that in the moment when the clock is ticking and you've got to run a play in 20 seconds, you've got somebody who has an instant answer to all of those situations at the ready.
See, I'm a little confused. So you want another voice to be in the coach's ear in that moment? Aren't those situations and analytics, can't they be worked out mathematically before the game even starts?
And they are. But this is somebody who is telling you how it worked out ahead of time. This is somebody who has a one-word answer into your coach's headset that tells you ahead of time, when we weren't in the heat of the moment and we were all thinking rationally and we had time to set all this up, here's how, you know, here's what we said we would do here. We'd go for it. And then the coach makes a call on whether or not to go for it. But he knows that based on all the data you've collected and how you plan for this in this situation, here's what we think is the best thing to do most of the time. And you've got somebody that answers that question.
I think that's good in theory, but I also think it takes away from the instincts of the coach. If you're a head coach, you've been hired to take over a team based on your expertise. And your expertise can vary from X's and O's to game philosophy, whatever, right? Putting together personnel. It just seems like to me that's a part of what you hire the coach to do. Now you're sort of minimizing the requirements to be a head coach when you start hiring specialists to do other things. And then a large part of coaching, whether you're a position coach, you know, growing into coordinator, growing into head coach, it's feel and instinct. And that's what is different about Belichick versus somebody else. I don't really love that because I think you're...
I think you're minimizing
what the coach is innately supposed to do, is to feel the game and not be like, well, it's 51%, so we're just going to go for it.
What I think you're not understanding, and maybe I'm not making clear, is ultimately it's up to the head coach. He'll make that call. This is somebody who reminds you what your plan was going in, and then the head coach applies his own instincts and his own situational thinking.
Yeah.
Tough decisions definitely on the horizon, not only for the Vikings, but all the teams around the NFL. Specifically with the Vikings and some tough decisions coming up, what do you think that entails?
Well, obviously there's, you know, some free agency, pending free agents to decide on, and Mike Zimmer was asked about that yesterday with Anthony Barr, Sheldon Richardson, Everson Griffin is, you know, that's the talk about whether they might need to restructure his deal. Kyle Rudolph, somebody who has a very high cap hit. I mean, they've got the I think it's their 30th in cap space right now.
Yeah.
So right there at the bottom, and I mean, they've got to be able to create some sort of financial flexibility to go after free agents that they want to. So they're not having, I mean, their draft strategy kind of relies on what they do in free agency, right?
Yeah.
For a team that has a quarterback that takes up 15% of your cap, you knew this was going to happen this year. You know it's going to happen next year. So they've got some really tough decisions, I think, that they have to make within the next few weeks. And it's going to be, I don't think it's going to be as, I don't know, crazy of a free agency that we saw last year, but there are a lot of moving parts here that people, you know, need to keep track of, because if it's one restructure here and then you might release a guy here and then that creates caps, that creates more space here that you can go spend on somebody, and if you spend in free agency, you're not probably addressing that exact same thing in the draft, and that might change what you do at 18. So, I mean, there's a lot of moving parts.
For all of you, if no Bar, then what is the contingency plan?
I think you draft a linebacker. Right. I think that there's I don't think you I mean, certainly I don't think they're going to franchise him. This team doesn't use the franchise tag that often to begin with. And I don't think that there's really a need to overpay at that position when you can draft his replacement.
All right, let's go through. You talked about some of the release candidates. Let's talk about them individually and tell me if you think they're likely here or likely gone.
Okay.
Anderson Dejo. Cap savings of $5.5 million.
Likely gone.
Mike Remmers.
Likely gone.
Kyle Rudolph. And I'm not even putting restructure into this conversation right now. We're just, this
you're
is
saying
just a,
here or there.
I say likely here.
Likely here.
I have a very hard time seeing, I know that the restructure is, you know, it's being talked about. I mean, he's a very high cap hit for someone whose production is what it was the last few years. I mean, they really need to get an athletic complement to him.
What if Kyle does not want to restructure?
I told you. I know. It's
a uncomfortable conversation.
And that's why I'm taking
easy.
It off the table.
Look, Courtney, this is not Mardi Gras. This is
big-time business we're dealing with right now. Mardi Gras comes after you get the restructure in, when you move his cap hit down about $2 million. But
if that doesn't happen,
likely
here or likely gone? Kyle Rudolph.
I still think he's here.
Yeah.
Everson Griffin.
From what Mike Zimmer said yesterday, I think he's likely here.
Okay.
He was asked, like, do you have a decision to make on Griffin? He's like, I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
And the third day of the league year is March 15th.
Yep.
And that's when his base salary is
$10.9
million. That's guaranteed.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that they want to work on a restructure before then, just because that eats up a ton of space. But I could also see a scenario, though, where a release would come into play, but just I don't gather it from what Mike Zimmer said yesterday. I mean, not at all.
Laquon Treadwell, there's not a lot of cap savings to be had, but nevertheless.
And you incur some dead money with that, too.
You do, actually. Yeah. You pick up $2.5 million in dead money. Laquon Treadwell, likely here or likely gone?
He needs a change of scenery. So I'll say he's likely gone.
Is it assumed Latavius Murray's not on the team next year?
I think so.
He had that weird clandestine tweet the other
day. Yeah, like, what was it, like, looking forward to the future?
Yeah, the unknown is exciting or something.
I mean, I think that, too. I wake up thinking that every day.
Yes.
What about Trey Waynes?
What about that report?
It makes sense to a degree because you have such good cornerback depth, but I think that Rhodes is a better trade candidate. I really do. I don't see, you know, to me right now, if we're looking at the way that this lays out, I think Trey's gone after the 2019 season anyways. He's going to probably price himself out of what they can afford. They picked up his fifth-year option.
Yeah. Do you feel like you're being interrogated?
A little bit, the way you guys are looking at me, too. But here's my thing on Waynes. If you trade Rhodes, let's say that that's, like, on the table, because nobody's talking about that here, and I know I've, like, broached the subject that maybe that's their wild thing they do this offseason.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, can Trey be a number one corner? You can play sides. You can get by with that. I mean, but then the rub of all that is what's going on with Mike Hughes.
Right.
Mike Zimmer was noncommittal on, like, okay, we just really don't know what the ACL, like, how long it's gonna take for him to get back.
Yeah.
And then there is another hit to your cornerback depth, so it's a big equation.
And how big does a jump does Holton Hill make? I think that's a big part of it. And you won't know that until you've made all these decisions or forced to make these decisions.
Yes.
Because his biggest strides you're going to see, you know, obviously in the OTAs and the mini camps, you know, later in the spring. And by the time you get to there, you've had to make decisions on the cap and all that stuff. So I think everybody realizes he's a very talented player, but is he going to be a starting caliber player for 16 games? I think that's the thing they have to figure out inside.
Sure.
Because you're not going to have Mike Hughes back 100% by the start of the league year. You're just not. I mean, he might be healthy and might get a clean bill of health, but every ACL guy you ever talk to says, I never felt explosive until a year plus, 12 months plus. You know, you might be able to run, jump, cut, and do all that stuff and be on the field, but getting that explosion back, especially for a guy like of that athletic caliber, he needs that explosion to be successful.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Courtney, what do you think about the recent Nick Easton news? I mean, honestly, when that next situation transpired, I mean, if I had to wager one way, not only did I think that he probably wouldn't play in 2019, I thought maybe his career was in jeopardy, but I guess he's been cleared to play. So, I mean, Easton, it's in no way are we making Easton sound like Steve Hutchinson or Randall McDaniel, but my belief is on the inside, they really, really like him because of his toughness. You know, so what do you think is next with Nick Easton, and how can he help?
I think because he's, you know, he's up for free agency this year. I think they want to bring him back. I mean, they like him because, I mean, that type of build where you have him at left guard, he's just an annoyance for defensive linemen. Like, that's what, you know, Zimmer was saying yesterday. I mean, Linville hates going up against him in practice. A lot of guys hate going up against him because he's just that nasty. I mean, he's a big body guy. He's nasty. He gets to the second level. They need second level linemen. And I think that Pat Elflein has struggled at that before. And I think putting a guy like, keeping a guy like Nick Easton next to him and maybe drafting, you know, or maybe going after a low to mid-level starter in free agency. I don't know if you're going to get Roger Saffold. I know people are excited seeing that the Rams, you know, probably going to keep him. I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah.
But you can get, you know, a lower tier starter and spend $3-4 million and be okay as long as he's a second level guy and as long as he kind of has that same type of build as Nick Easton, because that's what they like at that guard position, and that's what they need. That's what they struggled with this year.
All right, last one for Courtney Cronin, ESPN, ESPN.com.
We touched on Latavius Murray. I think consensus here is he probably doesn't come back as an unrestricted free agent. If that happens, do you think there's a necessity for this team to add depth at running back, or do you think Boone and Thomas are good enough? And, you know, most teams roll with about three running backs.
I think there is some concern just about Rock Thomas and the injury history. Mm-hmm. I mean, Mike Boone was somebody that they wanted to use last year. I just don't think that, you know, it was a numbers game. So you could address it late in one of the later rounds, but you need, for someone like Dalvin Cook, who has had, I mean, I know he's got a clean bill of health now, and he's talked about he's healthy, and we saw that explosion towards the end of the season. I still think that you want a good contingency plan behind him, and, you know, they clearly liked what they got in those two college free agents, so I think they want to see what they have in them, but I think you could get somebody, too, just a numbers game. And I don't know if it's Amir Abdullah. I don't know what they want to do with him yet, if we'll keep him.
Gone.
Yeah, I wouldn't get on that.
Nope.
We talked about the salary cap situation for the Vikings, and we've got all these other moving parts for guys that are pending free agents and whatnot, but the one guy that has a contract that's outplayed his contract is Adam Thielen.
Yeah.
Any news and updates that you've heard as far as, like, are they looking to restructure? Or are they just saying, like, sorry, we can't do that this year, but we'll take care of you next year? What's any word on him?
Well, it's tough. I spoke with Blake Barrett's agent on radio about a week and a half ago, and, you know, the talks there, the way that he put it out there was that, you know, they certainly want to reward him. This is a team that has done this for the last few years, where guys' contracts are up, you know, 1-2 years from now, and they're going to reward you early. Realistically, what leverage does Adam have right now? I mean, he signed that deal.
Right?
He signed that deal, and now that's probably priority number. If you're looking at, like, the entire free agency gamut, that's probably priority number, like, 7, quite honest. I mean, there's just no money for that right now. And, you could move him into Stephon Diggs territory eventually, and I think he will make that kind of money. I mean, he deserves it, but, you know, there's... And we talked to Rick Spielman, I think, on Wednesday, and just kind of, you know, they've had these tough situations before with Pat Williams, Chad Greenway, Brian Robeson, and from the GM perspective, you want to do the right thing, and there are a lot of very difficult decisions like this where you have a guy who's clearly deserving of a new contract, but you're financially, it'd be irresponsible if you make that, put that in your top tier of priorities.
Great job. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Courtney Cronin, ESPN, ESPN.com, at Courtney R. Cronin via Twitter. NFL Combine coverage continues around the corner with Greg Cosell from NFL Films and NFL Matchup. Norv Turner joins about 25 minutes from now. Don't leave.
You're listening to PA, Charge, and Lieber from the NFL Combine, presented by Whiting LASIK Eye Care and Cataract on The Fan.
The free Movie Friday program with Adam Tickets is ending after this month, so be sure to tune in every Friday for a chance to win before it ends. Adam Tickets, the best app to book your movie tickets, wants to hook you up with tickets to see A Star Is Born as an encore in theaters today. Discover never-before scenes and performances as the film returns to theaters for 1 week only. text LOW to Adam 1. That's 28661 for your chance to win. Standard data and text message rates may apply.
Combine coverage continues, courtesy of Whiting Clinic LASIK and Cataract. Welcome back to Indianapolis, specifically Combine 2019. Paul Allen, Paul Charchi, and Ben Lieber. On-site producer is Nordo, and Joe Perovich guides the great ship Love Covenant from FM 100.3 KFAN and the Bryant Heating and Cooling Studios. Happy on-site to be joined by Greg Cosell, at Greg Cosell via Twitter, executive producer and analyst for NFL Matchup. And the NFL Matchup show, very good. It's with Sal Palantonio, Matt Bowen, and our next guest, Greg Cosell. Hi, Greg.
Paul, what's happening?
Things are well, thank you. Are you enjoying the Combine?
Enjoy the Combine.
Does it ever change for you?
No, I love the Combine. It's my favorite trip of the year.
Yeah. You have been with NFL Films 39 years.
Just finished my 39th season.
Wow. How about the metamorphosis of the National Football League through the lens and through your mind?
Well, I started in 1979.
Jeez.
So that's I started when I was 5 years old, by the way, Paul.
Right.
But no, I guess when I started, Films maybe had 50 employees.
Yeah.
Probably close to 300.
Wow.
But obviously, everything involving how you do your work, you know, the mechanics of working,
right,
has totally changed.
Yeah.
You know, with digital. And I mean, you know, it's funny because with the Matchup show, which I started in 1984. You know, we would have to get tapes. We would have to wait for tapes. Now everything is, you know, literally 2 hours after the game ends, it's in your computer.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
So it's a
isn't that amazing?
It's a beautiful thing.
Nobody's sending you tapes.
I'd have to go to our
later.
Tape. Right. I'd have to go to our tape room on Monday, and he'd say, "Well, we're just starting these games, so come back in 3 hours."
Yeah. Right.
You know. Yeah.
So how long does it take you now versus back then to watch? Let's say you're breaking down one of the quarterbacks. Let's say Dwayne Haskins, right? From back in the day where the technology was what it was to now, you just like pulled up and probably filter through every down and distance and
Right? I mean, I everybody probably does those kinds of things differently. My approach is, particularly when I watch a quarterback, and usually I watch more games of the quarterbacks than any others because that's what I get asked about.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to know about the quarterbacks. So I usually watch 7 or 8 games. So what I'll do is I'll watch 7 or 8 full games, all their dropbacks.
Yep.
Then, depending on what I see and how I feel, I will almost always watch all third downs, red zone, you know, because I try to get a feel then for situational football, which is what the NFL game is ultimately all about.
Yeah. Is Oklahoma's Kyler Murray fascinating to you?
Very. I really liked him on tape. To me, it just comes down to the eye of the beholder about his size.
Yeah.
Because I think that he's really talented. And to me, what makes him so talented is the way he can throw. Because at the end of the day, for a quarterback, even if you have great movement, you still got to throw the football. I mean, Ben knows this. So I think, you know, I made this point when I put out my report on Twitter, and I got ripped for it a lot. I said that he's a better thrower than Russell Wilson. I wasn't saying he's a better quarterback than Russell Wilson as we sit here and talk right now.
Yeah.
But Murray is an easy – Murray throws it like Mahomes. Now, when I say that, Mahomes is freakish with his arm strength. Murray's arm is not like that.
Okay.
But the way he throws it, he's loose. He's easy.
Yeah.
Russell Wilson is not loose and easy. He drops the ball below his waist a lot and kind of winds up. Murray is just an easy, natural thrower of the football.
Brilliant.
How's his anticipation and timing?
Yeah, it's a great question because, you know, it's an offense that's very defined. You know, it's he's certainly not taking deeper drops and having to wait for guys to get into zone windows at 18 or 22 yards. Mm-hmm. And that wouldn't be his game in the NFL anyway because he probably wouldn't be able to see that at some point. So that offense is so well defined with the quick reads and the quick throws that, you know, I don't want to say he can't throw with anticipation, but I don't think that's built into the way they play. You know, when you've done a lot of, you know, the Big 12 games, and you know those kinds of offenses.
Yeah.
They're not really that style of offense.
No, but I would say that watching Oklahoma's and Lincoln Riley's offense, you know, last year
right.
with Baker Mayfield, I thought Baker, even within that
did
offense,
have great
he did have anticipation.
I would agree
like,
with you.
He knew when a guy was going to yeah. run a deep end. He was throwing that ball before
yeah,
the guy
I don't think Murray's quite like that. I thought okay. Baker was way better. And it's funny, I loved Baker Mayfield last year.
Yeah, I did too.
I absolutely
yeah.
loved him. You know, I didn't know much about him until I watched him on tape because there was a perception, or maybe I just had this perception, that he was kind of a runaround guy,
right.
which he was not at all. No. Because I watched all Baker Mayfield's third downs last year, and I think they were, whatever the number was, there's a lot of third downs. But on only like six or seven did he actually leave the pocket. He was throwing the ball from the pocket within the timing and structure of the pass concept.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we haven't given the Browns organization enough credit for making that right pick. That was largely against the grain, especially if you
right.
back up to the combine last year.
Right.
And Baker Mayfield was pretty far off radar, and it wasn't, you know, most of the rest of the league didn't catch up until
Paul,
2 days.
Paul, I think last year at this time, people were saying he's probably a third or fourth round pick.
Right.
Maybe a second round pick if you know, if the people who liked him.
Right.
Yeah. But, you know, but I remember watching him on tape before the combine, and I actually talked to some of my buddies at ESPN because they asked me, you know, have you watched the tape, some of the on-air talent?
Mm-hmm.
And I did, and I told them that, hey, this guy's a pocket player,
yeah,
and he knows what he's looking at. He throws the ball with anticipation, as Ben said, and he's really accurate.
So, okay, go
well, ahead. I'm not saying in Kyler Murray before we get away from him. Other than the height, are there any other red flags on him, or is that really it? And if you get comfortable with the height,
right.
you know, there really isn't another thing to talk about that he has to overcome.
I don't think there's a major red flag.
Mm-hmm.
I think with shorter guys, and we see this with Russell Wilson, there's always going to be throws they leave on the field because they may not see it,
yeah.
and obviously then they're going to move. So, you know, Russell Wilson does that a lot and then runs for 12 yards, and I actually spoke to a Seahawks coach a couple of years ago, and I said, what do you guys say to him when he misses, you know, the design of the play is there,
right.
and yeah. he doesn't throw it, and then he runs? And they said, well, if he runs for a good yardage, we say, good play. You know, so, yeah. I mean, you know, I think that you just have to live with that. So, and the other part of that is I think there's always snaps with a shorter quarterback where he moves prematurely because, again, it may come down to not seeing something, and if you don't see it, your instinct is to move. So you'll always get that, but I don't think – I didn't come away from watching Kyler Murray thinking he's just looking to run.
Right.
I think he's looking to throw the football.
Good.
Like I always felt Michael Vick was looking to run.
Right? Yeah, agreed.
Correct.
Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, and first of all, Kyle Murray's a way, way better thrower than I don't think there's any comparison.
For sure.
Right. A guy I want to bring up because you have watched a lot of quarterback tape, and I hope you don't burst my bubble, but I'm a fan of Will Grier. What do you think of Will Grier?
Are you really? I'm not bursting your bubble. I struggled with him a little bit. It's funny. We were just talking about Baker Mayfield. You know, I try to be totally objective when I watch these guys. I try to think about, hey, if you like them, why would you like him? And I could see some people thinking he has a little Baker Mayfield in him.
No,
he's not as good as Baker Mayfield.
No. I like the looseness of which he plays.
Well, it's funny you say that because that can be viewed as a positive or a negative.
Right.
Like I looked at his game as a little too loose and undisciplined and reckless at times.
Right.
But that some people.
But I kind of like that.
That could
you
be
know,
looking,
like I kind of
yeah,
like
yeah.
that like mentality a
yeah.
little bit. So I go
so,
on if you got
so,
more.
But the point I'm you know I think he's. He's a good thrower, not a great thrower. I was a little bothered by the looseness. I think that for Will Grier to be a quality starter in the league, to me, he would have to play like Drew Brees with that kind of precision
yeah.
in every element of his game.
Right.
That, to me, would be the way he would have to play to be a quality starter.
So, Greg, the Vikings go 8-7-1. The new quarterback, 4,000 passing yards, 30 TDs. Whether it's via NFL matchup or just you doing your thing, when you went all 22 on Kirk Cousins last year,
yeah.
what do you remember? What do you think needs to change into 2019?
Well, I know a lot of people got on Kirk because obviously the big contract. So the big contract made people think he's Tom Brady.
Mm-hmm.
He's not Tom Brady.
Yeah.
You know, so I think Kirk's a certain kind of player, and I think that he's a system piece. In other words, the offense has to work for him. He doesn't make the offense work. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, so you need a run game. You need a good O-line. You need a good scheme in your pass game. it has to work for him to be efficient. If you don't have those things, then I think he's not going to be as efficient. You know, numbers are numbers. We're in an era where a lot of guys throw for 3,000 yards. Kirk's numbers since he became a starter in Washington have been very, very good. You know, if you just look on a sheet of paper, you go, this guy's a pretty good player.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not a ranked guy, so I'm not going to sit here and say, well, I think he's the 15th best. You know, he's a certain kind of player.
Yeah.
And I think that if their O-line doesn't get better and get addressed, then I think that they're going to have problems with their offense being consistent on a week-to-week basis.
How far down the road are you on offensive linemen for the draft?
Not as far as I'd like to be.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen some. You know, I think they need interior line help. You know,
for sure.
I think guard is a position that needs to be addressed. And again, you guys know me. I'm looking at tape. It's never personal.
Yeah.
But you could easily make the argument that they had the worst two starting guards in the NFL.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. And I think the tape shows that. You know, I don't think their tackles played particularly well last year. And in all honesty, I didn't think Elflein played as well last year as he did the year before.
So does that open the door for Garrett Bradbury? A player that's getting a lot of steam.
Who is Garrett Bradbury?
He's center from North Carolina State, okay. 4-year
yep.
starter.
Okay.
He's a guy I've seen, by the way.
Yeah, what do you think?
I loved him on tape.
Really?
I think that he's for a center. I think he's got really light feet. He's kind of nasty. You know what I love about centers? When I see it, and Ben will appreciate this, most teams in the NFL and in college, when they're in their sub packages, the center's generally uncovered. Because you almost get 2-3 techniques and two wider, nine mm-hmm. rushers. I love the way Garrett Bradbury goes after, you know, whichever defensive tackle he's sliding toward. I mean, he goes after people. He plays with an edge. He's athletic. Some will say he's too short. Oh, that becomes, again, eye of the beholder, where teams and their critical factors on their boards. But I love the player.
Is Garrett Bradbury a candidate to slide to guard, or is he really a center, and he's a good center, so why take him out of that?
I don't think that people, if I'm not mistaken, and I don't have my notes right in front of me on him,
mm-hmm.
but I think he measured it under 6'3".
Okay.
I think he was like 6'2 and 5/8 or 6'2 and 7/8, something like that. And I don't think guards play. I think he's a center.
And I just watched him as the TV screen is right over
his shoulder.
They
happened to be up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he was running around.
That's him right there. He's 7. That's 7 right there.
Yeah. You can see he's a little squattier. Right?
He's squatty. Like,
yeah.
Yes,
you can see he's a little squatty.
Well, so is Elflein.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But as far as moving to guard.
But I think Elflein could move to guard.
Elflein could move to guard,
I don't think that's right. I mean,
again,
I don't fancy myself as an offensive line guru, so maybe if someone was sitting here, they'd say I'm wrong.
Yeah.
But I don't see Bradbury as anything but a center.
I've got to talk to you about Devin Singletary, a guy my office is very excited about. And somebody, he's a running back from FAU. And, man, does he have some splashy highlights.
He does. That kid
is fast, and he's got some elusiveness
him. He's got a little, what we like to call juju, meaning that he's got lateral agility to him.
Yeah, he does. Talk to listeners about Devin Singletary.
I like Singletary, but I saw him as a piece. In other words, I don't think so. And again, if you're talking about the Vikings, they still have Dalvin Cook.
I'm not necessarily talking about the Vikings. I think he'll be gone before the Vikings would take him.
Right.
But I'm also in the fantasy football business, Greg.
Well.
And Devin Singletary is somebody who can make a splash in year one.
Points.
I do see points coming in the right spot.
Well, I'm really concerned about if your fantasies are about football. But
oh, they are. They are.
But I liked him on tape, but I saw him as a compliment, as a piece. You know, he's not, to me, your foundation back. I don't think he's the kind of guy you stick back there as an eye back, and he carries 20 times a game on a weekly basis.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he gives you some juice. I think he can. He's a hard inside runner, even because I think he came in at 5'7". Or five. He's shorter than he plays.
Maybe, you know,
maybe that could be checked by someone, but I think he came in at 5'7".
Yeah.
But he's probably over 200. I mean, he's built well. He's not a little guy.
Yeah. I saw him break a ton of tackles.
Yeah.
Wow.
But I think he's a, like, let's say we are talking about the Vikings. he would probably go well with Dalvin Cook as your starter and your feature back, mm-hmm. and then Singletary plays whatever number of snaps you choose to play. That's the way I saw him. I liked him, but that's the way I saw him.
Okay.
Last one, a minute, you get it all. Any quality 4-3 defensive ends?
Ooh, I haven't gotten to defense yet.
Okay, well, something to think about for when we have you, on the show up to the draft.
All right, I mean,
but not in rounds one or two.
Oh, okay, well.
Not in rounds one or two.
Yeah, that I haven't gotten to yet.
Okay, we got to get to that.
I really love
the football team, okay?
I really love
that's our fantasies.
From Clemson, Cleveland, is it Farrell?
Yeah.
I guess
Farrell, I think.
Yeah, but he's going to go in the first round.
So wait. Quickly, 30 seconds. Tier two quarterbacks. If the if the Vikings were indeed, like, we probably will have a new backup next year.
Right.
We also have Kyle Sloter, and we have Kirk Cousins. Tier two quarterbacks, if the Vikings were to draft a quarterback somewhere middle or deeper.
I thought watching tape that Ryan Finley, I think I made a note that he was similar to Kirk coming out of MSU.
Really?
So, I mean, obviously, I think he's that kind of quarterback.
Yeah.
You know, very similar, for want of a better term, a system guy. So that kind of player to me, Ryan Finley from NC State as well, I think, you know, would fit that mold.
And who'd hike him the ball?
Garrett Bradbury.
Oh, Garrett Bradbury, here we go.
This is great.
Garrett Bradbury, round two.
NC State won a bunch
Ryan
of games,
Finley,
right?
And then round three.
Like, won a big bowl
there
game
we
or
go.
Something, I would assume.
All right. And where's Devin Singletary going then?
Oh, Tampa.
Yeah. Or the AAF.
No chance.
Hey, thank you, Greg. We look forward to
appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
Greg Cosell at Greg Cosell via Twitter, executive producer and analyst for NFL Matchup. When we return, we play back an interview we conducted recently with a former Vikings offensive coordinator and current Panthers offensive coordinator, Uncle Norv. That's next. It's 9 to noon.
You're listening to PA, Charge, and Lieber from the NFL Combine, presented by Whiting LASIK Eye Care and Cataract on The Fan.
Hey, what's going on? Are you hungry? Are you pining for some fantastic fresh food? Then stop by Quick Trip. And when you stop by Quick Trip, not only will you enjoy the fresh food and the vegetables and the fruits and everything available, but the Coruba coffee is fantastic. Maybe on this Friday, this chilly Friday in the cornfields, you're looking for a little bit of a jolt, and you're looking for a jolt that is flavorful and also inexpensive. Coruba coffee, copyright Quick Trip, is absolutely fantastic, and you are not paying the prices you are paying when you roll to one of the big spot coffee shops. Now, when you're at Quick Trip, join the Quick Rewards program. If you're a new member, you get 10 cents off per gallon of fuel first time you fill up with a max of 30 gallons. So go ahead and check that out at Quick Trip. Find a location near you. Learn more about everything at quicktrip.com.
Join the Power Trip, Corey, Sauce, Hockey, AJ, and Mark Parrish in the Parlay Lounge at Treasure Island Resort and Casino March 7th and 8th for your chance to win a trip to Las Vegas and other great prizes. More info at KFN.com, keyword Vegas.
Norv!
Back at the Indianapolis Combine, courtesy of Whiting LASIK and a cataract, and joining us now, former Minnesota Vikings offensive coordinator and current offensive coordinator for the Carolina Panthers, Norv Turner joins us for Combine coverage. And, you know, you may remember, Norv, a few years ago when you were in the Twin Cities, we developed a shirt that was a purple shirt with gold lettering that said, Norv. We sold it at the state fair. Of course, you reap no benefits from it. But it was an incredibly popular shirt. I understand in Charlotte, they have a T-shirt with your face on it that says, "What's up, baby?" Because that's what Cam Newton says you always say to him.
They do have that shirt. It's not nearly as impressive as the Norv shirt. You know, there are people that wear that shirt on the beach in Del Mar, the Norv, the "What's up, baby?" I don't know where that came from, but it does exist.
Well, I've known you around 5 years now. I've never heard you once say, "What's up, baby?"
I don't remember saying that, but it seems someone thinks I do.
Yeah, welcome Cam to the show. Newton apparently thinks you.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, he thinks a lot though.
What do you think of now? If we're going to talk about clothing, what do you think about the way Cam Newton dresses?
What's up, baby?
Well, you got to understand that one of the first things I told Cam was, I wouldn't say anything about the way he dressed if he didn't say anything about the way I dressed. So we're in good shape.
Truce.
Would you take Super Bowl ring or T-shirt? I mean, I'm guessing that the T-shirt's got to be up there. That's what you've been working for your whole life, right? Is have these T-shirts named after you.
Those things, I think, the season's long and those things are entertaining, but obviously we know we're all trying to do is win as many games, get in the playoffs, and have success. So that's what we're driving for. And, you know, we've got a lot of young, good players. So I think we got a chance to be a good team.
Well, Paul Charchian is unbelievably excited to talk about one of them, Christian McCaffrey. So let me get this, since you're getting serious, Norv, let me get this one out of the way, and then they can go hardcore football. How many combines for you? Any idea?
Well, I just saw a thing this morning on the news that they were talking about the combine. It's been here since 1987, and my first was either 87 or 88, and I had not missed one until the year I was out. So this is probably 33 for me.
So back then you used to talk to prospects probably by using a payphone.
Well,
Morse code.
No question. You had the phone card that you used and slid it in. No question. There certainly weren't.
Flipper Anderson would page you.
There weren't cell phones, but it's interesting to watch it, and everyone talks about these guys and what they do. But, you know, I was telling someone the other day, Rod Woodson had one of the most impressive workouts, you know, here back in the late 80s, I believe, you know, and. There have been some unbelievable performances at the combine, and you kind of compare different guys to different generations. But these guys right now are really impressive. They spend so much time working out, preparing for the combine, that they have some great performances.
A story from the lap of Uncle Nor from Indianapolis. George,
you can't turn it off.
Can't turn it off.
That's the beauty of it.
What's up, baby?
Yes. While we're back, you know, back one more second on the clothing. I want to see sometime you and Cam have a bet, and the loser has to dress like the other guy.
The best.
Yeah. You'd have to dress like Cam, or Cam would. That's right.
I don't think that'll work.
That'd be great. I do want to talk about Christian McCaffrey, but maybe a little later. What I wanted to ask you is, your team started 6-2, and then you lost, I don't know, like 6-7 straight games until you got a win against, I think, the Saints in Week 17, and I'm not sure they were even playing for anything at that point.
Beat Shermer right at the wire.
They weren't, but they were playing their starters for about three quarters. Offensively, everyone talks about playing for nothing. We had about six backup players on offense, and
our
guys really performed well in that game, and it was important to us to play well in that game. You know, we all know what this league is about, and we're 6-2, and we lost two close games. We lost to Detroit. We missed a field goal, an extra point, and went for two in the last minute and didn't make it, and then we lost to Seattle and had a really good game offensively and missed a field goal with a minute left. And you lose those close games, you can't get them back. And there's some teams that obviously you're not going to beat. That's the way this league is. So when you get an opportunity to beat a team, you've got to do it. And you know, those two games probably kept us from being a playoff team.
You know, a large part of sort of that stat is you guys kind of hit a slide at the end of the season. Your defense, and I know this is a defensive question, but your defense gave up an unbelievable amount of third and long situations that really kept the ball going for the opponents. How did that affect the football team as a whole? Did it at all?
Well, I think it ultimately has an effect the more times it happens. But the biggest thing is you give up those third and longs. You work hard to get a team in the third and long, and you lose possessions, opportunities on offense. When you get a team in third and 17, third and 19, third and 14, which actually worked down in distances that teams converted, offensively you sit there and wait. And we're a good offensive football team. We're actually a good football team. You know, we had some devastating injuries in the offensive line we overcame, and we had a lot of changes in the secondary that I think you know, we eventually overcame, but it was a factor during that stretch.
Norv Turner from the Indianapolis Combine.
And then along with that, you know, it was reported that, you know, Cam was dealing with a shoulder injury. He did have a little bit of a clean out at the end of the season. How did that affect your play calling when you see a quarterback that's kind of struggling to throw the ball down the field a little bit?
Well, I don't think it was as big a factor as has been reported. You know, I was talking about the Seattle game. That was week 11. He was 25 of 30, you know, completed 14 straight to start the game. I thought he was playing at a high level. You know, he started pressing and tried to do too much. Had a rough game against Tampa with multiple interceptions. But then right at the end, the last three or four weeks in that New Orleans game, he was struggling. And, you know, I think he's done the right thing. They went in, they scoped it, they cleaned it out. He's rehabbing now, and I expect him to, you know, come back and be able to play at the same high level he was playing.
Well, we're talking about the quarterback position. You brought back a familiar name for yourself and for our listeners, Taylor Heinicke, and he actually started one game for you. What did you know? Having worked with him for another year, what did you think of that? And the limited time that you got to see him, I think only for a couple of quarters before he got knocked out. I think through an intercept, not through a touchdown.
Yeah, Taylor's a good player. You know, he actually got hurt in that game and played with his elbow. In pretty bad shape. We've got two good young players, Taylor and then Kyle Allen. You know, the position, I think when you get a young guy and you get to start with him, you know, on the ground floor like we did with Teddy, I think you can get a guy playing the way you want him to play. And those guys did a good job for us.
Doing any weekly radio in Charlotte?
I don't get near any of that. I don't. I
own any horses that run down there?
No, no horses.
Seriously, though, Kevin Stefanski, somebody with whom you're very familiar, new offensive coordinator for the Minnesota Vikings. From your days of working with Kevin, what do you remember about him, and how do you think he'll do?
Well, Kevin's, you know, obviously was we were together there. He understands our offensive system. When I watched them play, when he was calling the plays, it's very similar. It looks a lot like what we did. He's had opportunity, much like I did as a young coach, to be with multiple people. He's been with some outstanding coaches. I think you draw from each of them. Kevin's a very sharp guy, loves ball, great with people. He'll do a great job for him.
You know, one of the things in the news is Jason Witten stepping down and leaving ESPN and going back to Dallas. And the first person that everybody brings up is Greg Olsen. He's a guy that's done some color commentary. Maybe he could do it. I know that you can't comment on that in particular, but he's a guy that I watched for a long time, really respected. What was he like, and what is he like working with him as a player and as a person?
Greg's, you know, the ultimate pro, and he's you know, he's as well-rounded a tight end as you can find. Unfortunately, he only played in, I think, six or seven games. He's been injured 2 years in a row. I can tell you he's in rehabbing and working to get back. He wants to keep playing. I know the rumors are out there about him being, you know, being courted by ESPN and Fox. I don't know how much of that is, you know, reliable, but I know he is outstanding. When he's in the booth, he would be a great addition. I hope that doesn't happen. We have a good young tight end, Ian Thomas. We've got three good tight ends. Greg's obviously a big part of that. And it's a big part, as you guys know, it's a big part of what we do. You know, we're going to have a tight end on the field most of the time, and they're an integral part of what we're doing.
Let's get to Christian McCaffrey. A fantastic success story. He's an awfully good player, and boy, you weren't bashful about using him. Holy cow, did he get a lot of use? You ran him inside, outside. You threw to him. His pass protection was good. Talk to me a little bit about the special talents that he brings to the field and how you like to utilize him.
Well, he's a great young player, and that's what I was saying. The thing that excites me, we're very, very young, particularly at our skill positions, when you got Christian, DJ Moore, Curtis Samuel are both 22 years old. Christian's 22 years old. Ian Thomas is a rookie, 22 years old. So all those guys have great speed, can run on our playmakers. Christian can do it all. Obviously, he can run inside. He can run outside. He's a physical player. He's an outstanding receiver. He's just, you know, he's a lot of fun to be around. You know, when I got there, people doubted if he could hold up or play inside. He had a lot of touches, but it's not even close to what I've been with in the past. He had like 320 touches. 107 of them were catches. I had our PR guys look it up, and I think I've been with four or five guys that had over 400 touches in the game. So I don't think we are concerned about the number of touches he had. He obviously played 95% of the play, so he was on the field most of the time. But he can handle it. He's a young guy, and when he's on the field, you have to be aware of him, and it opens things up for other guys.
Last couple for Uncle Norv, Ben.
I just want to ask you to comment on one of my best friends, Heath Farwell. It's been fun to watch him, go from teammate of mine, complete knucklehead special teams guy into this very mature, knowledgeable coach, and now he left you guys. But what was your short experience with working with Heath as the special teams assistant at the time?
Just what you'd expect: high energy. Obviously very good with the players, very smart. Our special teams guys did a great job. We had a lot of changes there, as you do when you have injuries, and they did a great job of keeping getting those guys ready to play, and Heath will do great in Buffalo.
So 33 years of combines, there have to be stories from the lap of Uncle Norv. I mean, like these meetings that coaches have and personnel people and stuff, anybody ever completely, with you don't have to say names, completely bomb these meetings? Or like, give us a story from the lap of Uncle Norv involving combines from days gone by.
Well, one of the great ones, and thank goodness that we worked our way through it, there's a number of really good ones, but Stephon Diggs did not really overwhelm anybody with his interview, and he was a little self-conscious that time, and there were some stories about him and his character, and that's why he was still there when we drafted him. But I think everyone knows the story that Scott Turner had recruited him out of high school and when he was at Pittsburgh, and Rick Spielman said, "Hey Scott, if we draft this guy, you got to make sure he's all right, and you vouch, you step up on the table for him." He said, "Absolutely. We believe him, we trust him." And thank goodness that happened, because obviously he's the type of player you want to have on your team, and he's just such an outstanding person and player.
Charge, wrap it up.
When you're talking to these kids, now they're all coached up and they've got all the stock answers and everything. Do you have your questions that you try to do to sort of, evoke a more natural response from them? Try to do things that will test them in a way that they're not prepared for?
Well, you try hard to do that, but every year you do something like that, then the next year they're
coached
prepared.
Up on that.
So you try to stay one thing ahead. One of the things we do, which is good, we don't do a lot of verbal stuff. We put the tape on and have them describe the play, describe what they're doing, talk about their technique. Probably of our 15-minute meeting, 10 minutes of it is watching them on tape. And you get a pretty good feel. It's unrehearsed because they don't know what plays
you're going to show.
Yeah. And, guys, they revert to who they are, and you get a feel. I think that interviews at the combine are overrated. If you count on 15 minutes of time to make a decision on a guy, it's foolish. I think the most important thing now in the combine are the physicals. The little bit of interaction you get in the interviews, you get to get the measurables. But we all know the you evaluate players. We're just talking about Stephon Diggs. You evaluate players of how they play in games against the best competition, and you make bad decisions when you start basing it too much on what happens here at the combine.
When you show them those plays for 10 minutes, it's not their highlights, right? I mean, these aren't, here's all the great plays you did. I assume that you're going to challenge them. You show them a lot of the plays where they got beat.
Well, it's a mix. And some ways you want to, like a protection where something came free. You want to know if they know the name of the protection, if they want to know who had the responsibility. There's some guys that only know what their job is. And then there's some guys that know the entire protection. They know what the quarterback audible to. They know how he audible to. We're talking about offensive linemen now.
Yeah.
But you get a feel for their understanding, a true understanding of football.
So when you go to the racetrack at Del Mar in Southern California, there really are Norv shirts.
They don't sell them at the fair there, unfortunately.
Yeah. But you
see them? I've never made any money or sent me a check for shirts that were sold at the fair. But, yeah, every once in a while you see one bouncing around.
Hey, great catching up with you. Tell Scott, Robin, and the rest of your family hello, and best of luck next year.
Thanks a lot. Always great talking to all you guys. I miss you.
Norv Turner, offensive coordinator, Carolina Panthers. Indianapolis scouting combine coverage continues after this.
You're listening to PA, Charge, and Lieber from the NFL Combine, presented by Whiting LASIK Eye Care and Cataract on The Fan. The Combine.
Nine to noon radio, courtesy of Whiting Clinic LASIK and Cataract, continues from Indianapolis and the 2019 NFL Scouting Combine. We thank Uncle Norv Turner, for joining the radio show. A taped presentation with a former Vikings linebacker and a current Bills special teams coordinator, Heath Farwell, is coming up around the corner. Ben Lieber had to duck away for a little bit for Vikings Entertainment Network-related responsibilities. It's Paul Charchian, Paul Allen, and producer Nordo, who's with us. You haven't been able to crack the mic this radio show, are you? And you're full of combine speculation. Are you handling yourself okay?
It's a little bit tough having to sit here, but I'll tell you, taking in from Courtney on the front end, and I love every combine because right now, as much as we're excited about pick 18, so much is focused on free agency, right? And whether it's the future of our guys, it's sneaky names with other teams that we might fall in love with later on, and the kind of the steamrolling in there. So when Greg Cosell is on, it's really the greatest elite college prospect mind segment that we potentially have any time we do combine shows. So I'm just sitting here, just a little student, just chalking down notes and just having an absolute blast with you guys.
I am excited because one of the key takeaways is everybody we talk to says this draft is deep in the same places the Vikings have need, which is really very fortuitous and hasn't always been the case the past several years.
Now we got a hit on them.
We've needed offensive line for 3 years, and it's been these meager drafts, not this year.
Yeah.
You're loaded with talent, guard, tackle, center. There's a real chance the Vikings get a lot better at the positions they need to get better in this draft.
How up to speed are you with Oklahoma offensive lineman Cody Ford?
Quite a bit, and he is not going to follow the Vikings at 18, I don't believe.
I mean, but you don't believe, like, no chance, don't believe?
I think it's a 20 to 30% chance he falls to 18.
The reason I bring it up is if they can get out of their first two picks somehow with Cody Ford at 18 and Boston College guard Chris Lindstrom at 50, I think this is an absolute
A-plus
coup de grace start to the 2019 draft.
Well, and many people feel that's the number one and number two guards in the draft. So, asking that to fall our way would be a best-case scenario for a team that needs two guards.
Mm-hmm.
To Greg Cosell's point, 64 starting guards in the NFL, he just told us he thinks we had numbers 63 and 64 in the NFL. So two starting guards in this draft would be a phenomenal accomplishment if they're as good as both Ford and Lindstrom look like they will be.
Yeah, it's not flashy, it's not splashy, but with the potential open situation the Vikings have at kicker, and Matt Weil was a little rough early in the season, but I think he came together really nicely punting. Mm-hmm. I wonder if the Vikings take a peek at kicker and or punter via the draft.
Our success rate in spending draft equity at those positions hasn't been great, and I wonder if that doesn't sort of hang in the back of the mind of Rick Spielman, and feeling like, well, geez, if we're going to spend fifth rounders on these special teamers and they're not going to work out, let's go somewhere else and let's hit undrafted rookies like most teams do for those positions. And this is a year when we've got the fewest, is this the fewest draft picks there's ever been for a Rick Spielman draft?
Well, we have eight right now.
We got eight.
Yeah, we have eight, and then I think his goal is to end up with more.
Yeah,
he likes to have 10.
Right, right. So
we have 1, 2, 3, 4, and then 2 sixes, 2 sevens.
Yeah.
I get that. You know, my sense is that Rick's not going to want to spend draft capital in a draft when he doesn't have his usual number of picks.
Yeah.
On special teams, so I don't think he will. And I don't think you have to, and I don't think I would either, Paul. Mm-hmm. I think I would. I'd go find. I would try to sell kicker in free agency if I could. And there are decent kickers out there. There's Jason Myers and there's Cairo Santos and
Dan Bailey.
I mean, I wonder if Dan wants to come back.
I don't know. It was a complete mercenary situation.
Right.
He got paid for his duties. Started out a little wobbly. I love how it finished. Mm-hmm. I'd love to have him back as the kicker, but I can't guarantee that's going to happen.
We could only speculate that what the change at special teams coach does in the mind of Dan Bailey.
Yeah.
Is that a positive or a negative? We don't know. But that's a factor, right? If he was very close to Prefer, that might be a reason why he doesn't come back. If it turns out that he didn't have a great relationship with Prefer, maybe he's more likely to come back.
Mm-hmm.
But Dan Bailey's as good as anybody out there, and you don't have to break the bank at kicker.
Yeah,
you know, you can solve your kicker with $3 million for a year. Get a very good one for $3 million. You can solve it for less.
Yeah, but $3 million is like half our salary cap.
I know it is. All right, well let's assume we're gonna solve it for less. With a free agent kicker,
yeah,
and let's go keep our fifth round pick keep a sixth round pick, and let's put that towards a depth lineman, that you hope you don't have to play, but could maybe someday you could.
Ben Lieber, Alex Marvez, Sirius NFL Radio, Vikings Entertainment Network. Any nuggets of joy?
No nuggets. I asked him about the prospect and the rumors of the combine being flip flopped. The day. I don't know if we talked about it yet, maybe off air, but the rumor is they're going to take all the physical events and move them to the nighttime to put them on primetime live TV,
yeah.
Do all the interviews at 8, 9 o'clock in the morning. I asked him if he had heard anything like that, and he says he had, but no confirmation, and he says that you got to be really careful with that because
it's a long ass day.
You got to remember that some of these guys are up at 4:45 in the morning for a drug test. And then their day goes.
Why are they drug testing at 4:45 in the morning?
Because they have to give guys time if they can't produce a sample to get a requisite sample, and then go about their day with their physicals and whatever they've got.
You don't have to do that at 4:45.
That's what we do during training camp.
Really?
During training camp,
they're pounding on the door at 4:45.
Yes. Yeah.
Jeez.
But you only have to do it one time, and that's the catch. That. If you, and the way the drug testing works for street drugs, you get tested one time a year. It's either during OTA time or during training camp. So if you get tested in OTAs, you're not going to get that knock on the door.
Right.
You might get that knock on the door for a steroid test, which happens, it can happen anytime. It can happen every day if it wants.
Yeah.
But most of the time, it's like one wake up during training camp to do a drug test. And it is that early, 4:45, 5 o'clock in the morning.
Wow.
And then there's been guys that have missed practice time because they can't produce a sample that's not dilute. It has to be a certain color and a certain pH.
Really?
Yeah.
So you got to go in there with a pH strip. You produce the sample, and they do that.
They do that.
They do that part.
Yeah.
It's if you fail that once a year street drug test, shame on you. For Pete's sake,
yeah, I've
come
always said
on,
that. Like,
man.
If you get popped for smoking weed or any street drug that. And you hadn't been popped for being like, getting pulled over or having an arrest,
right?
Because then you're automatically put in the program.
Right.
You're just an idiot. Because everybody knows when the test
is. It's so easy.
It's so easy.
And it's once a year, for Pete's sake.
Guys want to
smoke,
though.
You can't stop for the just narrow window. Man.
Yeah.
Shame on you.
More Combine speculation with Paul Charchi and Ben Lieber and yours truly, Paul Allen, coming up shortly. When we return, a Covenant catch-up with former Viking and a current Bills special teams coordinator, Heath Farwell from Indy. It's 9 to noon.
You're listening to PA, Charch, and Lieber from the NFL Combine, presented by Whiting LASIK Eye Care and Cataract on The Fan.
Combine coverage from Indianapolis continues, courtesy of Whiting Clinic LASIK and Cataract. Ben Lieber, Paul Allen, and a Covenant catch-up with one of our all-time favorites, Heath Farwell. Undrafted into the NFL, played with the Vikings 2005 to 2010, spent 4 years with Seattle, got a Super Bowl ring with that quartet of years, was the assistant special teams coach with Seattle, and most recently Carolina, and now he is the special teams coordinator with the Buffalo Bills. You're from Southern California. Any idea what it's going to be like living full-time in Buffalo?
I've been up there about a month, and I've seen all the different seasons. I've seen 60-mile-an-hour winds, 70-mile-an-hour winds, 15 inches of snow in a day, and even a 60-degree day. So I've seen them all. You know, it was, I guess it's somewhat similar to when I was in Minneapolis. So we'll embrace it. It's the outdoors. It's you know, it's football weather, I guess, is what you'd say.
I think this is actually the first time ever that I'm interviewing you, right? Like we've done interviews before, like being interviewed together. This is kind of odd that I'm interviewing you. You're like in the special interview chair, right?
I mean,
it's now.
It's not as glamorous as you're kind of making. It's kind of an undersized. I feel like I'm a giant in it.
Well, those are
big typically, but I feel like a giant in the chair they gave me.
Those in Minnesota who remember you from your playing days, you were 59, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, when you were 5'9", there was no hair. Now Lieber still has no hair. You have plenty
of
hair.
He's growing out hair.
I think he needs to bring it back out. You know, it's funny, as I shaved my head since high school, and my wife, you know, once I retired, I just stopped cutting it. And she goes, wait, hold on a second. You could grow hair this whole time? You've been cheating me. This is ridiculous. So she doesn't let me cut it anymore. I kind of typically grow it out during the season. And by the end of the season, it's pretty long hockey hair. So I've kind of migrated to the Sabres. So I'm kind of doing the hockey hair for the Sabres come football season.
So you've had this, like, crazy, just for the fans, a meteoric rise within the coaching ranks. You know, you coached for a little bit as sort of a pseudo assistant after you were put on IR your last football season with the Seahawks. Got a taste of coaching. Maybe didn't think it was your cup of tea. Did the business thing, went back to coaching, and then all of a sudden you're in Seattle for just a short amount of time as a coach. Then you go to Carolina 1 year as an assistant special teams coach, and now you're up in Buffalo as the head special teams coordinator for the Buffalo Bills. Could you just describe in your own words just sort of like this really quick journey that you've had from player to coach, and now you're the guy in Buffalo?
Yeah, it has been kind of weird. You know, I guess my last couple years, I was kind of the old guy. I kind of, you know, did a lot of the leadership, you know, captain type things, and kind of took some guys under my wing and did a lot of that stuff, kind of coaching on the field. And so I always had that part of me, but I wasn't sure I was ready to commit and kind of didn't know where I was at in my life. I spent that off season at home, and my wife literally was sick and tired of me, literally said, "You're following me to Target. This is ridiculous. I need my space." And was fortunate to get back in with Coach Carroll. You know, Coach Carroll and John Schneider have been great to me, great as a player to my family and I, and of course getting the opportunity to coach with them. So it has been a pretty fast rise, but I've been under some great staffs. You know, like I said, Coach Carroll, and then going down to Coach Rivera. Coach Rivera was unbelievable. You know, I learned a ton. There's two different programs, complete opposite, and both are great in different ways. So it was a good opportunity to kind of see different ways to do things and kind of fine-tune what my program will be about, take a little bit of both of them. And, you know, obviously the connection with Carolina to Buffalo, with Brandon Bean, Sean McDermott, there's a lot of carryover, so it was a good kind of transition, and they've been really helpful kind of transitioning me. So, yes, it's a big, you know, big step in a hurry. But I think I'm up for the challenge. I got a great assistant. Matthew Smile does a great job, and he's been with the organization, so he's kind of helped integrating me into the organization. So it's a great opportunity that I'm ready to embrace.
Hey, Heath, as a special teams coordinator, you know, and one of the great special teams players in the history of Minnesota Vikings football, quite honestly, how do you know when it's the right time to fake a punt or a field goal? Like, from a fake field goal standpoint, I'm being serious here. I think the last time the Vikings did it, Paul Ferraro was the special teams coordinator, and Jeff Dugan either got into the end zone or got close.
Yeah, I think that was when I was playing there, so that shows you how long ago that was.
I think Dugan got caught from behind.
I think he did. He probably did. But, yeah, that's been a long time. It is. I think the best time is when the other team doesn't expect it. So, you know, you see they're coming, they're showing up, obviously, in the playoff games. They become a big play, and if you can keep the offense, your offense on the field, and vice versa, offense has gotten so good. If you can keep it out of their hands, you have a better chance to win. So I'm sure every coordinator is speaking up to their head coach, saying, "Hey, we got these fakes. These are always so valuable." But it's just a matter of when is the right time. situational. There's so many, you know, it's an opportunity. It's tough. You know, it's not my line. You know, it's not my job on the line sometimes. When I'm on it called, it's the head coach's, job on the line. So we get it completely.
Heath Farwell used to play with the Minnesota Vikings, 05 to 2010. Currently the first-year special teams coordinator for the Buffalo Bills.
So, Heath, you and I have stayed in constant communication, and we remain friends throughout. And the one thing through this journey that even sort of surprised me when you were talking about taking the job in Buffalo, and one of the things that you think maybe put it over the top was your ability to embrace analytics, you know, and the numbers of the game. And that's sort of where a lot of sports are going. But could you just sort of elaborate just a little bit on how analytics play a part in special teams and with the NFL?
I mean, it goes a lot with the fakes and stuff, and there's a lot of things that go into situational ball that pops up, and analytics is, you know, obviously showed up, like you said, in sports, but I'm trying to bring it to some of the, some of the special teams units, and how can we take advantage of plays and certain formations and different things. So just taking advantage of all that stuff that's kind of new technology. Some of the, some coaches, are a little more old school with this, so you have to kind of bring them along with it, but a lot of coaches embrace it, and it's kind of the new wave. So a lot of teams are getting really into it. And, we just hired a new analytics guy that I've been working with and trying to get the best, presentation to kind of present to coach, and how can we help our team, and what's going to be a better beneficial for the team to win. That's what it's about.
I want to go down memory lane for a second. Your memories covering punts against Devin Hester.
Every time.
Those are nightmares.
Yeah, so that's not a good memory. Every time they show the highlights of the greatest returners, I get a few texts from friends and family members reminding me that, why are you on several of these punts? So I definitely, and then of course I get an opportunity in Seattle to coach him at the end. He still was special in his last year playing. He was a special talent. Obviously trying to tackle that guy was impossible.
Ben Lieber as a player.
Oh, Ben Lieber.
Oh boy. Do I need to step away for this?
Yeah, I think you might have to. He's a good friend, great friend, I should say. Great leader, great player, but he definitely was in control every time he got an opportunity to kick some kids off the sidelines at training camp.
There's that story.
He is by the book.
I played mall cop a little bit too much sometimes.
Yeah. Mall cop would be the best way to describe him now. He's great. No, I'm love. He's getting to spend time with him this week, so it's good.
2009 season, specifically with Brett Favre.
Oh, he's a great teammate. That was a memorable season. Obviously, Ben was a part of it. We had a great team, a great atmosphere. We came up short. That was the rough part about it. But one of my favorite teams I've ever played on. One of the most talented teams I've ever played on. But Brett Favre, like I said, he was a good teammate. I still run into him every once in a while. He's still a great guy and good friend.
So my last question for you is that we're here at the Scouting Combine, and talking to you, I have a new appreciation for what a special teams coordinator has to go through, right? I never really thought about it. I didn't really have to think about it. But talking to you, you sort of opened my eyes to the fact that you as a coordinator and those guys in that position have to know the team in totality, right? You don't have to just focus on just linebackers or just defense, or if you're just a tight ends coach, you've got to evaluate everybody. So when you're at the scouting combine, you've got to sit through all of these meetings, both offense and defense, and you have to look at these players and like, if we draft this guy, where is he going to fit on my special teams unit, and where's he best being utilized? That's a fascinating part of the job that I didn't realize that you guys had to do.
Yeah, I am sitting on the meetings. That's a big part of it. The early round guys, you're probably not gonna get a ton of reps on special teams, but the fourth, fifth, sixth round free agent guys, those guys pop up. Those guys are very valuable to me. Those guys, I'm gonna have out there. So if I can kind of interview them and kind of get a feel of how can I use them and how can they, how much special teams do they play in college? A lot of these guys haven't played a ton of them because they were the best player on their team. So, that's part of the deal with the transition to the NFL. A lot of these guys will be backups, therefore special teams guys. So that's a huge part of what we're doing here and trying to figure out those guys and how can they relate to our team and how can they fit in and how can we use them and utilize their talents, obviously on defense or offense, but special teams would help me.
Heath, I want to close by kind of tying the whole thing together with the Vikings, Seattle, and the Buffalo Bills. And it takes us back to 2008 with camp kicker Steven Hauschka. Here to take reps off Ryan Longwell's leg. Oh, Steven ends up with Baltimore and then subsequently wins the Super Bowl in Seattle with you. And now he's your kicker with Buffalo. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah, it's funny. He's gone full circle. He's been all over the place, but he's turned into one of the better kickers in this league. Like you said, I remember going back to you know, back to Minneapolis, back to the off season with him. So I've known him for a long time, been a good friend, was a great teammate, you know, in Seattle, and now kind of you know, circling back. Now I'm coaching him. We have a great relationship. That's the beauty of it. I think we'll relate really well together. We have a good communication. I think it's just going to be a pretty smooth transition. I think I understand him as much as probably any coach would.
Hey, congratulations on the opportunity, and thanks a lot for the chat.
Appreciate it. It's always good to talk to you guys.
Thank you, buddy, man.
Former Minnesota Viking Heath Farwell, now special teams coordinator with the Buffalo Bills from the Combine in Indianapolis. Back after this.
You're listening to PA, Charge, and Lieber from the NFL Combine, presented by Whiting LASIK Eye Care and Cataract on The Fan.
How would you like to win a brand new 2019 Honda HR-V LX? It could be yours when you play hands on a Honda HR-V with us at the Twin Cities Auto Show starting March 14th. 20 contestants will be selected to place their hands on the Honda HR-V. The last person with their hand on the HR-V LX wins it. If you think you've got what it takes, register now at KFN.com, keyword hands, all driven by your greater Twin Cities Honda dealer.
Hey, welcome back to 9 to Noon, FM 100.3, KFAN, your Dalton Risner leader. Dalton Risner, offensive lineman, K-State, running his 40, or he just ran his 40. Chris Lindstrom from Boston College, he's been on display. Likewise for Oklahoma's Cody Ford. This Bradbury cat from North Carolina State, Paul Charchian, all of a sudden, with whom he's infatuated. It's all coming together, boys. It's all coming together at the old Combine, courtesy of Whiting Clinic, LASIK, and Cataract.
Well, you know, speaking of Garrett Bradbury, we touched on it with Greg Cosell. How viable do you think it is to move Elfline to guard? I thought Elfline had a pretty good rookie year and a pretty nondescript year last year. I'm not opposed to making an upgrade at center.
Well, how much of that is attributed to the fact that basically from the Philly game up until what? I mean, a couple of weeks before the season started, he participated in almost no football.
Yeah.
And so then you finally get him back. You know, we spent, what, $2.5 million on Brett Jones or whatever, and, you know, Cornelius Edison's thinking he's got a chip chair and a chance, and ultimately now Elfline comes back in combination with some negative things that many people with big opinions have regarding the two people that played on either side of Elfline.
Yeah.
How much of that is attributed to not playing any football for, what, 9 months?
Yeah,
and then having maybe a lack of quality around him.
Well, my steam from a month ago was that Elfline would not move to guard.
Right.
Was that Elfline is staying at center. Now, FISA Fairness and Steam Act, that was before those with whom I chat had gone deep diving on combine interviews, everything that's transpiring here, and probably a lot of all 22. So I'm not going to rule it out, but I would make it a longer shot.
Yeah, I don't like the idea of him going to guard. I think he's more of a naturally built center, and I think he's a microcosm of when you lose Tony Sperano, he could have been that one voice that just clicked with him as far as motivating him to play at a higher level. I think he's a self-starter anyway, so I'm not saying it from that standpoint. I just think that coaches matter. You know, certain coaches can get deep into the player's soul and get them to elevate their play, which is the exact reason why everybody loves Mike Zimmer.
Yeah.
You know, you hear veterans talk about Mike Zimmer, and they're like, yeah, I was this type of player before Mike Zimmer, and then he got this much more out of me.
Right.
And so I think, you know, that's where I think they say they miss Tony Sperano.
They're showing some Garrett Bradbury up on the screen right now.
Yeah,
he's seven. He is fast. You know, they showed him getting out of his stance and running. And
I'm glad
he is
24, isn't
he? Correct. his footwork is really good. And if we are going to have a more mobile offensive line, Garrett Bradbury could be. I would not automatically rule out this team taking center at some point here.
Well, and this is one of the things where I think we get caught up into some of the measurables and all the things that we're talking about now. If you go back to the essence of what you're evaluating, when every evaluator says, I want to find a football player, I think you just you don't pigeonhole a guy like Bradbury, who yeah might be a little undersized for guard, but you can't tell me with his athleticism, the way he plays on tape, he could play offensive guard. Why is it going to be such an issue? I don't see like you have to move, you have to keep him at center. Hmm. Like if he's a smart player, then he can figure out how to play smart and tenacious at offensive guard.
Yeah. Nordo, carry us through some combine talkers that we're 14 segments into this thing. We have seen a lot, heard a lot, covered a lot, chatted with a lot of people. So Nordo wants to get us squared away for just what's transpiring within our football minds.
Yeah, ninth combine for the dynamic duo of PA and Charge. My fifth. And actually, the least number of combines at the table here is actually the guy that played in the NFL for a long time.
Somebody who attended a combine for real.
Since 2002, I believe. So
I had post-traumatic stress disorder from the combine, so I've chosen to stay away.
So, but we're going to get back to that O-line conversation in a bit. But I'm going to start off with this. And as much as the combine, as I mentioned, is about ultimately what the Vikings might do at 18, the steamrolling around here in large parts related to free agency. And, I'll start with you, PA, and we just kind of go around and offer quick twitch takes. Has your opinion changed on the status or future of any of the current Vikings as free agency approaches?
No, not really. I mean, I'm coming into it feeling Sheldon Richardson and Anthony Barr will not be on the team next year. When it comes to guessing on cuts and or restructuring with certain players, I'm not comfortable doing that because I don't want to be wrong. Regarding opinion, no. Maybe for backup quarterback Trevor Siemian, and it simply would be because I didn't necessarily think deeply about it into the combine. But off the podcastable Zimmer interview with us yesterday, it does appear to me that we will have a different backup quarterback.
I think that is absolutely certain. The thing that's changed for me, I think, the most about our own team over the course of these 2 days. I'm convinced Anthony Barr's gone. Now, I walked in thinking he was very likely gone, but now I think this is like a 2% chance he stays.
Right.
After digesting all the stuff that we've talked about, talking to people, just the steam that we've gotten, I don't think there's a scenario here.
Well, and we might have two open segments ish nearing the end of the show, maybe a segment and a half. We're going to play back the Spielman interview here in 10-15 minutes, but I want to get into with Ben the significance of linebacker this day and age in the NFL. And because the way you look at the way defenses are constructed, you want to be super deep on the defensive line and super deep in the secondary. So it just seems like certain linebacker positions are being de-emphasized in 4-3 defenses, not necessarily in 3-4s, but in 4-3s. So that's something I want to get into later. But off Nordo's question, what's your answer?
Well, I was going to say that because of the news that came up about the potential rumor of moving Trey Waynes and being trade bait, I would say now it's, with the speculation we talked about before the combine was, is Xavier Rhodes a guy that they could put on the trade block? And now that the rumor came out that they are potentially shopping Trey Waynes, that we're going to go into next season, it sounds like to me, with one of your starting corners not being on the team,
right?
And it could be Xavier, and it could be Trey Waynes. So that's a development that's happened in the last few hours that leads me down the road with the contract situation or the cap situation that we have and Trey's potential contract situation after 2019. That hey, we're going to lose one of the guys that has been the pillar to our outside of our defense for the last couple of years.
Miko Reisner?
We've done a lot of conversation work and put time into the offensive line. We've put it in a bit to the defensive end of things with the 18th overall pick, but we got 8 total picks here, and I'm curious if you guys have identified a different position, a type of player, something that we haven't talked much about, whether, Charge, you were infatuated with Devin Singletary.
Yes.
In terms of from a fantasy perspective.
I am.
And you have Hollywood Brown. There was we chatted about him a bit yesterday during the show, the wide receiver out of Oklahoma. Is there even throughout this draft, something that the Vikings could solidify that while here in Indy, you've kind of, it's piqued your interest in any way?
From my standpoint, the way Ben has chatted on and off the microphone about these Iowa tight ends, Fant and or Hockenson, I'm certainly not saying that I'm changing my opinion at 18, but in chatting with people regarding where they're going to be drafted, 18 is around a Hockenson spot.
It is.
And 50, you won't get either one.
No.
So if you look at those two as one of those two as a tight end who can dramatically, and again, the prime investment into this team is Kirk Cousins. So you protect him better and you give him more skill position guys. Mm-hmm. So Ben has me wound up over these tight ends a little bit.
Sorry, because I threw that out there as like, I don't know if that's going to happen because I think it's as far as the priority list, it's not high up there. But I do think that it is a curiosity of mine that could potentially happen, even though I think the chances are pretty slim. I would say that I'm more and more on the line with, man, I know that we need offensive line, and I know the offensive line and defensive tackle, interior defensive line is pretty thick in this draft. So you could find a good starter in the second round for either spot. But there's a potential that if you are going to lose Sheldon, and if you're under this understanding that I am, that Linval did not have a very good year, that I might be happy with having a defensive tackle, one of these game-changing, these D-line-wrecking defensive tackles.
At 18?
At 18.
Yeah, see, I'm not into that, man.
If you take Nordo's approach of trading up into the second round again, and then within 10, 15 picks, you've got a defensive tackle and then another starting offensive lineman.
Yeah.
Vice versa, I guess you could say that. Maybe you go offensive line at 18 and then trade up to get defensive tackle. I'd be fine with that.
If they can trade back in the first round and get, like, Boston College's Chris Lindstrom as their first pick.
Yeah.
Amass a pick later, get a pick later, third, fourth round, or whatever, and then maybe come back with what you're saying because of the depth of defensive line. I guess I could be okay with that. But with their first pick, I want them absolutely to take the very best offensive lineman available.
That's my feeling as well. And this year, because D-tackle is so deep, that second-round pick, you may get a talent that would normally go in the first round at pick 18 of the second round. So I'm inclined to wait. I'm inclined to wait on that pick. There's a fascinating D-tackle that you might know or maybe you don't. His name is Dexter Lawrence. He played at Clemson. He is.
So he's a Linval type tackle, right?
Well,
he's a nose.
My understanding is that he can play three technique. He was supposed to be a first rounder, but they failed a PED test.
Yeah,
and so you know now the expectation is going to fall well out of the first round. Maybe you take a chance on a first round talent in the second round with a failed PED test who otherwise wouldn't be there.
Yeah,
I don't know enough about his. I don't know anything about his character, and I don't know if the PED test thing is such a big red flag that you can't draft him.
Well, and it sounds like there. I know there's always like a behind the scenes story with all these PED tests. Rarely does a player come out and say, "Yep,
I did it.
I tried to cheat. I tried to cheat the system a little bit." You know, there were three guys caught up in that on that team that they got busted for that, and all three are saying that we only took what was given to us, and if we took anything off of the shelf, we did report it. So
yeah.
I think there's still an ongoing investigation to figure out exactly how that tainted supplement got in there, that ingredient got in there.
Yeah.
So he's still kind of proving innocence in the whole thing. I don't think it's going to matter as far as his character goes. The way I understand it is, yes, that defensive line is all very good. He's a big, stout player. When I've watched him before, I don't see a lot of, like, true quickness and twitchiness with him, but he's a big man. He's a real big man, and he plays that style, that angry style that they want at Clemson. And so, yeah, if he can be a nose and a three technique,
yeah.
But isn't there three technique Christian Wilkins?
Yes, but what my point is, if people think that he has the ability to slide out on the guard and be in situational situations, like,
now,
I'm not saying that he is always going to be a three technique, but if they think that he has the athleticism, kind of like you're finding a swing tackle, swing offensive guard, if you can find a nose guard that can slide out in pass rushing situations and go 2-3 techniques, then you got it.
And, you know, Linval at his age has got, you know, I don't know, 2-3 more years left maybe, right? And now maybe you've got somebody who could, you know, then bulk up a little bit and take over your true nose tackle spot later down the road.
2019 NFL Combine from Indianapolis, courtesy of Whiting Clinic LASIK and Cataract. When we return, the thoughts of Vikings general manager Rick Spielman. It's 9 to noon.
You're listening to PA, Charge, and Lieber from the NFL Combine, presented by Whiting LASIK Eye Care and Cataract on The Fan.
The 9 to noon Love Train heads into the final hour of Combine 2019. Thanks to Whiting Clinic LASIK and Cataract, Paul Allen, Ben Lieber, Paul Charchian. Nordo produces on site. Joe Perovich is back at the Bryan Heating and Cooling Studios at FM 100.3 KFAN. Potentially our final guest with this whirlwind 18-segment, two-day NFL Combine tour is Minnesota Vikings general manager Rick Spielman. We sat down recently with Rick and chatted a lot of things regarding Vikings football, including with me starting with the GM, asking him some specific and particular things that are important to him at a combine.
I think it's the opportunity that our coaches get involved with these players now. It's the first time we started our interviews with some prospects last night, getting an opportunity to do that, or the medical and the psychological testing, the intelligence testing, are all a huge part of this process to help us gather enough information to make the best decisions possible.
I'd like to look back at last year just a little bit. In fact, last time I saw you, come to think of it, was the day of the Kirk Cousins announcement. When you look back on the signing, how do you evaluate the season he had, and did you get the quarterback that you thought you were getting when you spent the money to get him?
I think just in general, it was we didn't meet our expectations this season, but I also know that with Coach Zimmer and the coaching staff he's put together, that we're very excited about turning the page and getting back on track. When you look at Kirk Cousins, you know, a lot of times when you go through that, there's no question, I think, that Kirk Cousins definitely has the ability to be our franchise quarterback. But you have to – he's always so going to get the blame because we ended up 8-7-1 this year. I think when we went out and with Kevin Stefanski and hiring a Gary Kubiak and putting him maybe in an offense that he's grown up with, through the Shanahan, through the Kubiak tree, and identifying the strengths on what he is really good at. And when you break down statistically, which we've sliced it, there are some things that he did really well this year. So understanding and being with him for a year now, and Kevin Stefanski being with him for a year now, understands, just like we do all our players, everybody has strengths and weaknesses, and hopefully evolving the offense that will give him the best chance to be successful and hone in on what he does best.
Ben Lieber? You know, going back to Kirk and his season, we saw the stats, we saw the numbers, we saw many faces of Kirk as well, right? He was a guy that gave a lot of pregame speeches early on the season. We saw the dead arm dance, and that became a viral hit. Guys really seemed to really love him. And then at the end of the season, then we start to see a little bit more emotion, a little bit more fire. There was the sort of the outburst and the discussion with he and Adam Thielen on the sidelines. How do you see him, and how do you think the players view him as a leader in that locker room?
Well, I think he's definitely evolved as a leader since he's came in the building, and you see that fire and the passion that he does play with. And, you know, I know how badly he wants to win and how much time, effort, and energy he puts into it day in and day out. But it's not... he's going to, like you said, get the blame on it, but it's not always just the quarterback. We had other things that we had to deal with, and I'm not ever going to make an excuse because of, you know, we dealt with some difficult situations this year, and I don't know if people realize the impact of Tony Sparano's death at the beginning of training camp, and maybe one of the most important position coaches on your coaching staff. And give credit to Clancy Barone and Andrew Janoco, who had to come in and take over in a very difficult situation. So, and then the injuries. But again, we're never going to make an excuse. You know, we didn't meet our expectations. But I also know, with the energy in the building, with the way the meetings have gone over this past month, as we prepare to get ready for the new league year to begin in a couple weeks from now, that we're very optimistic going into next year.
You alluded to the offensive line. I think it's safe to say that the offensive line underperformed last year. In your mind, do you feel that the offensive line as a group, or positions of the offensive line, are among the top priorities for you this offseason?
We've really dissected every position and where we identified our strengths, but also our weaknesses. And, you know, we have to look at the offensive line and how we can improve there. I think personnel-wise, we got to do a better job. I think it goes into a combination of actually what type of scheme you're going to run. I know defensively we've been pretty solid because we understand, okay, this is the physical traits at each position that we're looking for. When we go back to the offense, are we going to be a zone gap scheme? Are we going to be a straight-ahead power type team? Are we going to be outside zone? So a lot of our meetings were on, okay, what are the traits that we're looking for? I think the other things, too, is that coaches do a great job is even when you have to have replacements, like, you know, when we lost Everson Griffin, Stephen Wedley came in and did an outstanding job. When we lost Andrew Zendejo, Anthony Harris came in and did an outstanding job. But the coaches adjusted what they were doing, which is why we, under Coach Zimmer and the staff, to what those players' strengths are, that may have to tweak the scheme here and there. So you go back and you look at, and I know Coach Zimmer has talked about it a little bit, if we start running the ball more, if we start setting up things with play action, does that relieve some of the pressure when we had some of the injuries and some of the adversity we had to face this year in that room?
Hey, Rick, off the East-West game and the Senior Bowl, and now here we are at the Combine, how far down the road on the draft are you right now?
We're actually probably a little ahead of schedule. You know, our scouts, our processes that we have in place never change, regardless if you're in the playoffs, not in the playoffs, as the coaching changes are going on. We stay on a very strict timeline on what everything needs. We're always going to have our initial draft meetings in December. We're always going to be at the All-Star Games. We always know that we have our draft meetings and our UFA meeting, free agent meetings, before we come down here, our cap planning meetings, and we know the combine. So everything's set, the schedule's set in place. So the biggest thing was with some of the new coaching coaches on the offensive side of the ball, okay, let's identify those physical traits we're going to look for in the areas, you know, from a position standpoint on how we're going to improve.
Well, off that, in each year, not every position is loaded up at the draft. From an offensive line standpoint, do you like it this year, top to bottom?
You know, what we do is we go ahead and grade our players. Then we went through our whole free agent process. We had the meetings. We had the meetings with the coaches. And we lay out every position that we have a list on the potential cuts and trades that could potentially happen. And we have where we're at right now with our draft board. So as you lay that all out on a piece of paper, you can see where the strengths and weaknesses are. So I think, you know, everybody's been talking about it. One of the strongest positions that I've seen in a while here is that defensive line group. But I also think that the other position is very strong this year is the offensive line. There's going to be a lot of guys as we go through the process that we may identify. The one thing that I think you have to realize is that your team is not built after 2 days in free agency. It is a continuous process. And if you're not active the first couple of days of free agency, okay, then we probably feel pretty strongly that we're going to fill that need at some point in the draft. But it's, you know, it's exciting because a new league year kicks off. But you don't have to say, okay, within 2 days, we're going to have our roster set. It's a continuous process through this whole, all the way up through the draft.
Minnesota Vikings general manager Rick Spielman at the 2019 Indianapolis Combine. Ben?
Well, you mentioned a couple of times physicality. Now, that's a thought process and a behavior, it sounds like. When Coach Zimmer had his postseason press conference, he mentioned that he wants the team to have a little bit more toughness, a little bit more attitude. And he said in all areas of the field, not just defense, but on offense as well. When he says something like that, does that in any way change your guys' evaluation process of like, okay, when we look at a free agent guy or a college guy, maybe we look for more finish, attitude, toughness over skill set, and maybe we can just bring this raw talent in that plays with some nasty, and we can develop from within.
That's always been one of our criteria. You know, one of the biggest things is the intelligence, because, as you know, Ben, you have to be smart to play in this league. Not a lot of guys that aren't intelligent end up making mistakes, and then the coaches don't trust them, and they don't put them on the field, regardless of how talented they are. But I also think it's a point of emphasis, and it has been, that we're finding tough, gritty guys, because you have to love to play this game. No matter if you're making $1 or $100 million, you have to love what you're doing. And if we can find guys that love to play football, then that is definitely one of the top criteria we're looking for.
Two of the famous Rick Spielman combine quotes coming together in one place here. Number one, we'd love to keep all of our guys, but we can't. Number two is how important the second contract is for your players. You like to have, you like to develop your players to the point that you want to pay them that second contract and then and be able to keep them. And they're Viking guys that you know. The team is in a position where you've got good young players with contracts coming up. But right now, only two teams have left at this moment, today, the second. There are only two teams with less salary cap room than the Vikings. Talk to me a little bit about the salary cap situation right now and maybe even some of the tough decisions that you're going to have to make over the next couple of months.
Well, Paul, we'd love to keep all of our young free agent players. I think the biggest, you know, as you plan this, you have to know that we've made some significant commitments to these young players and have been able to get these players under contract. And you have to balance it is at some point, you know, when we're doing our cap planning and our roster planning, we're going to put out four different scenarios. Okay. So if we keep player A at X amount, we're probably going to lose player B or C. Is it worth keeping player A, or is our team better maybe letting player A go to keep player B and C? You know, you look at potential trades out there. You look at potential, you know, do you go out there and spend big money on a free agent, or do you try to keep your own? So you look at all the different combinations, and you have to come down here to the combine with probably four or five different scenarios at each position that we've been through. When we get back from the combine and talking to our players' agents, we'll have a better sense of where we're at. So we'll regroup, and then truly you end up having a pretty good idea of who you're going to be able to keep and not keep once you get into that two-day negotiating window before free agency begins. So right now we have laid out a game plan, meeting with the coaches and the scouts and Rob Brzezinski, and we have four or five different plans right now in place with, I can't tell you the amount of scenarios that we have, but we'll kind of hone that in once we get back from here.
Is Anthony Barr sort of the lead pin on all of this because he's a true unrestricted free agent? He's probably going to be very expensive, and you'd like to keep him. And so is he sort of, you know, guy A in what you just described, because whether or not he goes would shift so many other things?
There's so many different scenarios. I mean, Sheldon Richardson was a very good player.
Yeah.
So we do have some difficult decisions to make. And that's probably the most challenging part of this job and sitting in this seat, is listening to the coaches, putting everybody through different scenarios on how our roster could potentially look. I mean, we've had seven or eight different looks on how our roster could look going forward into the 2019 season. So trying to come up with the best combination possible to keep as many of the players as we can.
I have a couple of weird ones I'd like to get out of the way before you guys go hardcore on it. With Rick Spielman, general manager of the Minnesota Vikings from Indianapolis at the 2019 Combine. What does Chad Beebe's future with the team look like? I'm a Chad Beebe guy, and I liked how that whole thing developed last year.
I keep not looking at you because that hair is just killing me right now.
Beard. I figured if I came looking like a mafioso, you would fear me and give me all the answers. Chad Beebe.
Yeah, no, Chad did a great job for us, and you know, he's one of those guys that we were fortunate enough to find in our tryout camp last year. And I think, again, that goes to show some of the, you know, just bringing in guys that have that are smart, that have a passion for the game, that may have got overlooked, and then all of a sudden they come in and do something that catches your eye during our rookie mini camp. And he was a tryout guy, just like four or five of our guys were that currently are playing on our roster right now. And then give them to the coaches, and then let the coaches do what they do with them. And, you know, we think Chad has a chance to be a good player for us.
What stimulates you more, free agency or the draft?
Jeez.
What? I know you enjoy both, and you're addicted to trading. So but you can trade in free agency.
Yeah, free agency is a part of building your roster. But I always believe that we're always going to go to the philosophy of building through the draft,
yeah,
developing our guys, and those are the guys that you want to reward.
My last weird one. Any idea who the kicker is going to be on the team next year? Well, it matters.
Well. Church didn't bring that up. I mean, you didn't even bring up
that. I have a list of kickers to be needed.
Yeah. I like Bailey.
Getting in Marwan Mulloff, our new special team coach, and sitting there and listening to him and his ideas and how he's done things. And they found some great kickers. And he's a guy with Ryan Ficken that are going to go out and, you know, as the saying goes, beat the bushes to see what shakes out. And we looked at all the free agents. We looked at guys that potentially will get cut. You know, Dan Bailey did a great job for us when he came in once he got down with his rhythm. So, you know, that's another area that we have to definitely look at.
All right, a couple of quickies to close for the GM. Ben?
Well, you bring up, PA, you so eloquently brought up Chad Beebe, and Rick, you talked about there's a number of guys that have gone through the Adam Thielen route where they just – they get the call of the wild. They come up. They try out.
It's called rookie mini camp.
Okay, just so okay. From a player standpoint, the call of the wild.
And they, you know, the guys you know, quote unquote off nowadays. The streets.
And they go out and make the team. You know, I don't have any numbers to back this up, right? I don't know if other teams have this high success rate of guys that come in for these tryouts, making the football team, and then making significant production and gains on the team and development. Do you get a sense that word is around the league and around the agents that, hey, you're going to get a chance if you go to the Minnesota Vikings. They're going to give you a fair chance as a guy off the street to make a team.
I think the part of it is, especially we've been so much more aggressive in college free agency. And a lot of that has to do with from the ownership giving us the resources on, okay, I've got the number on what the league average is on what they spend in free agency. 5 years ago, which I didn't do a very good job of, we were way below that. The last two or three years, we've been almost double what the league is spending on college free agency. Part of it is we want to continue to build our roster with this young talent. Just to give me an example, we had, you know, just drafted a first-round corner. We have a lot of depth at corner, and we were able to nab Holton Hill out of college free agency. So I think the agents know that if they do come here, even though we have a pretty talented roster, they're going to get an opportunity. And Coach Zimmer's motto has always been, once you get here, I don't care who you are, you're going to get a fair shake, and if you're the best player that are going to help us win ball games, you're going to get an opportunity to show that.
Bobby?
Time for two more.
Charge?
Does he have to give the last two? Can I go back to the Chad Beebe question?
See? No, who else is going to ask you about Chad Beebe but your announcer?
You have the luxury of having four starting caliber cornerbacks, maybe even four and a half starting caliber cornerbacks. In your mind, is that some, you've mentioned trades several times now, is that some potential trade capital for you to work with?
Yeah, no, I'm not ever going to mention our business and what we're doing and not doing. But again,
I'm not asking, are you actively trying to shop those guys? But it's a position of need on a lot of teams, and it's a real luxury to have that many good players.
He's complimenting you. We're really deep at corner.
We are. Can you use some of that as trade equity to maybe plug some holes somewhere else?
You know, I think every team does that. So every team that has maybe a surplus or players that are very good, or, you know, teams will approach you on that, you know, whether it's corner or safety or linebacker or defensive line.
Are teams approaching you on this because you do
I'm
have
not
so many
tell you
starters?
If teams are approaching us on that. I'm just saying they could potentially do that.
They could do that.
And
they could
if they fall. Do that, then you potentially say, well, no, you know, one of the most important things in Coach Zimmer's defense is he wants rushers and cover guys.
Yeah.
And we've had, over the last couple of years, if you look too, we've had some injuries at that position. Mm-hmm. And we had some injuries last year at that position. So you have to weigh in all that. You build up all this depth, especially in an area of importance for our defense. And if you start throwing guys or trading guys out, then how is that going to affect your football team, and how's that going to affect, you know, the way we play defense?
This sucks. You have to go, and we have a million more questions. Just quickly, Everson, Barr, Lindstrom, Reisner, Olindo Mare. Oh, Nick Easton. Nick Easton. Nick Easton's back, isn't he?
Yeah, no, he, you know, we've spoken with his doctors, and he was going to get cleared to play, but he's coming up as an unrestricted free agent. So, you know, we'll visit with all our players' agents while we're down here and kind of get a sense of where the market is for everybody and try to make the best decisions we can going forward.
With the visits with agents and everything that transpires outside of the drills, is this more of a job interview or Mardi Gras?
It's a combination of everything. I've been going, and I haven't even did anything personnel-wise since 7:30 this morning on a lot of other ancillary things going on here at the Combine. Do you like that word?
Yeah, very good. Thank you.
So it's a great opportunity because this is where most of the business starts here at the Combine, because agents, GMs, coaches, players, everything is down here in one setting.
And that's Minnesota Vikings general manager Rick Spielman from the 2019 Combine. Charge, Ben Lieber, yours truly, Paul Allen, with some reaction to that interview and much more. When we return to Indianapolis, it's 9 to noon.
You're listening to PA, Charge, and Lieber from the NFL Combine, presented by Whiting LASIK Eye Care and Cataract on The Fan.
Save the date for the inaugural Mike Zimmer Golf Classic happening May 13th at Bear Path Golf and Country Club. Former and current Vikings, as well as local celebrities, will team up with partners and sponsors for a day of golf. Fun and prizes with hole-in-one, longest drive, and the closest to the pin will all be the contests that are included. All proceeds will benefit the Mike Zimmer Foundation outreach programs. More info at KFN.com, keyword community.
Welcome back to Indianapolis, a late addition to the Combine-related programming. It's the Professor John Clayton in Indianapolis joining us. Hello, Professor.
Good to see you. How you been?
Good to see you, John. John Clayton, columnist, Washington Post.
Yeah, can you believe that?
When did that start?
What I did, I started a weekly column in September for the Washington Post. And then all of a sudden, out of the blue, about a month ago, I get an email from the sports editor and says, oh, here's your contract. And so now I'm a Washington Post columnist on top of everything else. On the sidelines with Ben during Viking games. And
Can I say one thing real quick?
Of course.
As I'm in Nate's shot here. Doing the sideline bit, right? Everybody sort of wants to help out everybody else with information. John, you are the very best, from what I've experienced, about helping out the opposing team's sideline reporter.
Oh, well, thank you.
You always come over and give me information, whether we use it or not. So I've always appreciated, like, you will come out of your way and walk over to us and say, hey, just want you to know, this is going on our sideline. I'm like, oh, thank you.
That's great.
Really, thank you.
But you have to admit, I mean, doing the sideline stuff is a blast.
Of all the stuff
I've done during my career, it's one of the most fun things I've ever done. It is so good. It's a different perspective of seeing things. I mean, you get different things, crazy things, and I just love it.
Yeah, and you get your steps in.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Well, and the great part is, as long as the music's good. If the music's good, it's country, then I'm going to go back in the press box.
Yeah, what constitutes good music John Clayton?
What's that? Hip-hop, beat, anything with a rhythm.
All right, I like it. John Clayton making asking for hip-hop on the sidelines.
Yeah, I didn't realize Post like Malone and Sway Lee Sunflower was your favorite song.
Yeah, Lil Wayne is like... I still remember I went to the...
That's great.
I only went to like one ESPN magazine party, and I was in Jacksonville.
Yeah.
And so I was walking out, leaving, and all of a sudden there's this big disturbance. And so I was like, what's going on? And it was Lil Wayne trying to jump a barrier to try to get me to come on stage with him. It's like, are you kidding me?
That's great.
That's awesome.
So I always took the tag of Free Lil Wayne.
Right.
Free
I love it. Radio, podcasting, columnist, Washington Post, and noted hip-hop dancer.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, not dancer. Clayton. I just listen.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't
enthusiast.
Dance. Yeah, enthusiast.
Let's go with that. You work at 710 in Seattle.
Right.
So you obviously talk a lot of Seahawks. I thought the Seahawks had the potential last year to be a bottom three team because of all the offseason moves.
Yeah.
They gutted, you know, so much of that team. Pete Carroll, by the end of the year, I thought Pete Carroll should have won Coach of the Year.
Yeah.
I thought what he did with the, you know, the remnants of that team to make them playoff competitive was unbelievable.
Seven starters on defense he replaced and four on offense. Think about it, 11 starters total, and he ended up winning one more game than the year before and then going to the playoffs. No, it was a great coaching job.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. How do you feel about the Seahawks rolling into this season?
The issue they have right now, they only have four draft choices, which, of course, John Snyder is one that likes to have 8 to 10, and he can trade down a couple times, like he did it a couple years ago. He picked up four draft choices in three trades that took him into the second round. Now, it took Malik McDowell, who turned out to be a bust and never played a down, but in the end, they got about three. Chris Carson in one of those moves they picked up in the seventh round, so he's real good at that. If they can get about four or five more additions on defense, so a little bit more depth with another pass rusher, I think they have a chance to close the gap a little bit on the Rams.
Yeah, that's, you know, no team does a better job. They only got the four draft picks.
Yeah.
But no team does a better job historically of finding undrafted players who can walk in and someday turn into a meaningful starter.
Mm-hmm. Or even last year, I mean, they could have had like four compensatory picks, but they elected to go get players, and they paid like $3.4 million or less, but they got four starters out of that.
Yeah.
The year before, they get Bradley McDougal, who had a Pro Bowl alternate year at safety. You know, they picked up DJ Fluker for $1.5 million, and he helped turn around that run game to a point where they're the best running team in football.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable transition.
And a guy that we know really well, Darrell Bevell, was replaced by Brian Schottenheimer. How do you think Brian did in his first year?
He did well. He did really well because it took him a couple games to kind of get adjusted because he was enamored by the arm of Russell Wilson. Mm-hmm. And so his mission was to run the football. And so he came in the first couple games, they didn't run the football. And so all of a sudden he has a meeting with Pete Carroll and they both talked it out. And it was so he would love the arm of Russell when he wanted to use it. After that, then they became the best rushing team in the league. So he had a good year, and I think he can grow on it because, you know, all these people are saying, hey, they need to get exotic in this and exotic. No. Take the first year and get the base of the deep offense going and then add to it.
And that's the one thing that I think a lot of these people, even here at the Combine, have to realize that certain quarterbacks, if we're talking quarterbacks, have a certain style. And I think that we would all agree that Russell Wilson's better when he's got a running game.
Yeah.
If you try to throw the ball 50 times a game, kind of like Drew Brees, if you ask Drew to throw 55 times a game, 50 times a game, he's not going to win a lot of games. He's going to make a lot more mistakes than that. But if you've got a run game, play action pass, use that accuracy, get him outside the pocket a little bit, then he's deadly.
Mm-hmm. And that's a big thing that, because he's got great escapability. But the problem for the 2 years prior to this past year was that, I mean, they had no blocking on the offensive line. He was scrambling. It was almost like street football. And so they can't do that. Now at least they have a plan, and a plan they can build on.
The extra offensive lineman they used last year, George Fant.
Yeah,
he's fascinating to me. And you know, I know when he came in undrafted as a basketball player his first year, I think they wanted to put him on the practice squad, but they were worried, desperately worried they were going to lose him. So he was on the active roster. And then he was that extra offensive lineman last year, super underrated in paving the way to the league's best running game.
Yeah, in fact, because he had as many as 27 plays at tight end just to block. And the weird part is in his rookie year, now here's a guy that in college was a tight end and a defensive lineman. Never played offensive line, but he played half the season starting at left tackle. And he did pretty well, but then he got an injury. It set him back, and so he had the ACL injury, and so he had to come back from that. And so they have an interesting choice this year because, I mean, he's a restricted free agent. They know he has value. They're probably going to put the second-round tag on him at about $3 million.
Yeah.
And it would not be out of the question that at some point in the next year they'll give him the right tackle job. They almost did it last year, but then you know, Jermaine Ifedi came on and did pretty well for the first time. And then hadn't done that before. But you know, I think right now he's probably going to be the future right tackle.
Is Ifedi still a hothead?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He cooled down a little bit, but, I mean, what, he had 22 penalties in 2017, and a lot of them just blowing up at the line of scrimmage.
While we're talking Fant, and by the way, wasn't it against the Vikings in the preseason?
He caught a pass.
That he tore the ACL?
Yes.
Yeah, I think it was. While we're talking Fant, is Noah Fant a potential selection for Seattle? The tight end from Iowa, because it seems to me like they could use a tight end there.
They don't have a standout guy. No, they don't have a standout guy, but they're content right now because, again, what you know, not like in the days when they had Jimmy Graham, who couldn't block but could catch.
Right.
But they want a blocking tight end. So Ed Dixon was the best blocking tight end available in free agency last year. They thought Will Disley was the best blocking tight end. But he tore out his patellar tendon, and Nick Vanette came on. So they got three tight ends.
Ah,
yeah.
Ah.
So where are the Seahawks looking right now? First round.
First round, I think defensive end, if they stay in the first round. They need another pass rusher because when you think about it, you know, the big changes that they had, you know, they lose three starters on the defensive line. You know, they lost Sheldon Richardson, mm-hmm. who wasn't a pass rusher, but a good player. You know how good he mm-hmm. is. And then they also lost, they traded away Michael Bennett and they cut, and they also, you know, they lost Cliff Averill because he retired. So now they have to take Frank Clark from being the number three pass rusher to number one, and he had a 13-sack season and did really well, but they need somebody else because if you look at defensive end, the next best guy was Quincy Jefferson, who went to my high school, and he only had three sacks.
Well, Frank Clark's unrestricted, right?
Yes, yeah. He'll be franchised.
Yeah, he'll okay. Now, with from a defensive standpoint, given defense is such the identity of Seattle Seahawks football has been for X amount of years, that Legion of Boom mm-hmm. with Richard Sherman, Cam Chancellor, Earl Thomas, with Sherman gone, Thomas out, and Cam Chancellor retired. I mean, how different was it? Did that whole thing resonate well in the locker room?
It did, yeah, because I mean. You could see from Richard Sherman, he wasn't a big fan of Russell Wilson, and there was a lot of different interplay and stuff like mm-hmm. that, almost like in Pittsburgh. I mean, they needed to change some things, and so they changed that completely, and it came out pretty well. They picked up Trey Flowers in the fifth round, and he was really good.
Yeah,
and they had a little bit of a problem at the end of the season with Shaquille Griffin because he had an ankle injury, and it kind of bothered him and slowed him down. They were kind of juggling at safety. But ultimately what they're going to have to do is go ahead and try to get a few extra guys on defense. But I think they're going to come out pretty well. They give up 21.2 points a game. And if they can get more talent to take it to about 18, then they're in good shape.
John Clayton, 9 to noon.
Bobby Wagner. I think he's one of the very best linebackers in the National Football League. Do you think that he gets the respect that he deserves?
Yes. He does now. It's taken him some time, but again, I mean, most people consider he and Luke Kuechly to be the two best middle linebackers in the game. And when you start to look down the line, you know, he's starting to get some consideration. Maybe he's too early yet, but he's the early consideration. If he can get another contract, play as well as he can, and then he can probably be, you know, a potential Hall of Famer.
20-plus combines for you, right?
30. 30 consecutive.
Yeah, 30 consecutive. Now, for Paul and I, this is 9 consecutive. And when we were doing the radio shows from the concourse at Lucas Oil, I think there were 4 shows. There was us, Pittsburgh, Cleveland, and Sirius NFL Radio. Look at this room now. I mean, it's just how much has this whole thing changed in the 3 decades you've seen it?
1990 was my first. And in that, we only had 7 reporters here. 7
total people.
Total, yeah. Yeah. No cameras, nothing else.
Was Sid Hartman one?
Sid was not there. No, he wasn't chasing people down. No, he was not there. But again, we only had 7, and you know, at that point, there was so few of us. They gave us free reign. So like, we would sit over by the Crown Royal, or the Crown, the Royal Plaza, or whatever you call it.
Yeah.
And then we would be on the inside, sitting by the elevators, watching all the scouts get into fistfights as they're trying to get players to come over and go for interviews. And when they started seeing more reporters starting to show up each year, then they put us in the lobby. They took away all the chairs. They turned down the heat. And it turned out the lights, just hoping they were going to go away. Holy we didn't go away.
And they wouldn't even play Lil Wayne.
They wouldn't play Lil Wayne.
Lil Wayne wasn't born yet.
He wasn't born yet, right?
That's really funny. That thing, things have changed
last
a lot.
Last one for John Clayton?
This may be a unique draft in that the teams at the top of the draft don't need quarterbacks.
No, I know. Isn't that strange?
Isn't that weird? I can't remember going to a draft where the top 5 teams, none need a quarterback.
Well, it sure helped that the best 5 players in the draft are all defensive players, too.
Yes.
Front 7 guys.
Yeah, well, there's that. Do you think the Giants will be the first team to take a quarterback?
Yeah. I can't. Right now, and again, it's funny because you can see the rise of Kyler Murray, mm-hmm. but what you can't see is the 3 teams in the top 10 taking Kyler Murray.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if Tom Coughlin would trade above
The Giants.
I think Giants take Dwayne Haskins. Mm-hmm. We'll see what I think Jacksonville then will take an offensive tackle, and then I think Drew Locke may end up going to the Denver Broncos.
So you don't believe Arizona will take Kyler Murray?
I don't buy it. I don't buy it. Nick Bosa's too good.
Yeah.
And they could be just positioning to get equity, try to work a trade, right?
Yeah. Is there any life to the rumor that Josh Rosen has deleted all of his Arizona Cardinals tweets from his Twitter account and that he's actually kind of disgruntled right now?
I mean, I wouldn't surprise me with him. I still remember I had him on Sirius Radio on Moving the Chains, and he was promoting something. And so, I go through the long spiel that you normally do when you're saying, so you have giving this to this, and this is a real good cause, and tell me what, it's like, this is a good one. Yes. That was it.
Right.
I was done.
That's all you got.
That's all I got. It's like for his promotion of this, he had one word. Let's put it this way. He deleted the promotion.
The professor, wow. John Clayton from the NFL Combine, at John Clayton NFL via Twitter. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks,
thank
John.
You.
We'll be right back to put a wrap on Combine 2019 after this.
You're listening to PA, Charge, and Lieber from the NFL Combine, presented by Whiting LASIK Eye Care and Cataract on The Fan.
I can't wait until tomorrow.
45 minutes past the hour. This is the final radio segment for yours truly with Paul Charchi and Ben Lieber and the 9 to noon production from the 2019 NFL Combine. Joe Perovich guiding the great ship Love Covenant the last 2 days. Impeccable work. Thank you very much for that from the Bryan Heating and Cooling Studios. Likewise for Eric Nordquist, regular producer, 9 to noon. Nordo has been on air, on site, on demand, and on fire with us here in Indianapolis. And thank you to Dr. David Whiting and Whiting Clinic LASIK and Cataract for a continued sponsorship of the 9 to noon radio show and our journeys to Indianapolis.
And I'll reiterate that I used their services for LASIK, and it was fantastic. It's almost like going into a luxury, like, car dealership or something. You walk in there, yeah. Everything, it's just beautiful, pristine. Yeah. The way they treat you is just, it's like a luxury spa experience almost, and the doctors are great, not just Whiting, but my doctor was Dr. Loomis, fantastic guy.
Yeah.
And spent a lot of time just listening to your situation, explaining all the options in as much detail as you want. And we talked about a lot of potentially, you know, like, progressive stuff, early things, you know, early evolving technologies, all mm-hmm. kinds of things. So encourage it for everyday eye optical needs, and then, you know, more sophisticated things like cataracts and LASIK as well.
Ben Lieber, 18 segments up, 18 segments down. Some JW Marriott tape conversations with Rick Spielman, Pat Shermer, Norv Turner, Heath Farwell, and so on. Your thoughts on your maiden voyage, not only into Combine Radio, but coming to the Combine as a non-player.
I loved it.
Good.
It was great. Thank you, you guys, for having me. Thank you, Town Hall Brewery, for supporting me through this whole thing. And, it's everything that you guys told me it was going to be. I mean, there's a lot of energy and excitement here.
Yeah.
It's the whole NFL world is all in one location, and that rarely happens in the calendar year. So
right.
The fact that we're here, and you just look around and you see all these, national beat writers, and you see a GM, and I was like, yesterday I was just waiting to do Vikings.com stuff, and I see John Lynch, and, you know, John Lynch and I go back way back to working out together in San Diego, so it's like good to like see him.
Sweet.
You know, so it's, you know, these random things. I saw Mike Vrabel yesterday. He was getting off the podium. We did NFLPA stuff together, so yeah. It's like, you know, you just turn around and there's like a guy that you hadn't seen in years, and you start like talking and picking up where you left off.
And what I like is that, you know, you'll see these guys, and they don't have, like, an entourage of security to keep, you know.
No.
You know, it's just, you know, here's John Lynch walking around. You know,
yeah, so,
you know, everybody's as approachable as the NFL gets in any one place.
Well, you know, with, generally at this time for Charge and I, when we've done Combine shows, we have so much fun, and it's such a whirlwind of speculation. The shows go fast, and it's so much fun. We always are like, we don't want to go. We want to do more radio and do more stuff here. From listening to Joe Perovich's weather report,
when we say we don't want to go,
we might not be leaving. I mean, I wonder.
Don't say that.
Don't say that.
Ben, because you don't have, we'll you don't have the nine-year history. We are at about a 50% delayed or canceled rate on our return flight.
You guys didn't tell me that on the front end.
Unbelievably bad luck.
It is.
But I think we're okay.
You think so?
Well, because it's not here. And this is with all due respect to the Indianapolis airport, which is a quaint, very cool airport. It's a sneaky cool airport.
It is.
Specifically with that Harry and Izzy's tab we're about ready to stick the shake with in about 2.5 hours.
That's right.
But it's when things get sideways here, that's when things go pear-shaped. It's beautiful here, man. It's like 40, 45 degrees, sunny outside. And back home, they've been to bad weather handling school.
They
at
know
our
what they're
airport,
doing in MSP.
I think we're going to be okay.
I hope you're right.
I really hope you're right because everybody's got things to do tomorrow. But my daughter's got a horse jumping contest tomorrow.
Wow.
And my son's got his playoff hockey stuff tomorrow.
She jumps horses.
Yeah,
she must be pretty tall.
She's a hunter jumper.
Wow.
Oh no! Wait, the horses jump over her.
Yeah, the horses
What's
jump
next?
Over her.
Steeplechase?
And then jockey
at Canterbury.
No, she would love to be a jockey. That'd I think she's already probably too tall.
Yeah, right. I don't think the genetics work out
at 10
for
years
that.
Old. I think she's already taller than some of the jockeys.
But I'm sure because Benjamin, to assist with the Vikings Entertainment Network, he came out before us. So not only are we sweating getting back because of bad weather, when we do get back. We get to navigate to Terminal
T2.
2.
The old T2.
With the outdoor
what is it
parking
about,
and
what
snow
is it
the
about the last Wednesday in February
that
every
it's
damn
ridiculous.
Year T1 is full
no
in
idea.
The middle of afternoon on a Wednesday, the last Wednesday in February?
Absolutely.
Every year.
No idea.
The only time T1 is full is the last Wednesday in February.
Yeah.
And it's so random.
You know,
why?
The cool thing is at least you got covered parking, though.
Yeah. No covered parking. I got to deal with that. It'll be okay. It certainly will all be offset by a very profitable and a very fruitful trip to Indianapolis, where there were so many things we learned, but one thing that's resonating with me as we leave is the potential for the Vikings to have a different backup quarterback. And, just thinking of some of the names that are available via free agency, not including the draft, you have your guy, Ryan Fitzpatrick.
I'm on this. If we don't go young. If we don't go, we don't find somebody in the draft, Stu Beard.
Tyrod Taylor is available.
Yep.
And as is Teddy Bridgewater. Teddy Bridgewater is a free agent.
I don't see that happening.
At all.
Why? I put that at 0%.
Why?
I don't think Teddy wants to come back.
Right.
I mean, I think the organization, if they saw him as a backup, they'd be stupid not to try. But I think that Teddy himself is he's gone through the Viking stuff. I don't think he wants to be a backup. I think he wants to be a starter. And I think
you're right. I think he's going to try to find some place where he can at least
Washington
compete.
Or Miami.
Right. Where Miami
makes
a
lot of sense.
Miami does make sense.
Yeah, going back home.
Yeah, it would make sense that way as well. And they need some quarterback help, so maybe he can help there.
What about
he did not help himself with his Week 17 performance though.
About the all of the trading a cornerback steam involving the Vikings that kind of popped up while we were here at the combine, specifically Trey Waynes?
We just asked Spielman about that.
Yeah, what'd you guys think about that?
I mean,
you have Waynes, Rhodes, Hughes on the mend.
I still think that Xavier's the guy that they should trade, but I do agree that you're in the same contract conundrum next year. If Trey goes out and continues to keep improving, then he's going to command
big money.
Sort of top of the market cornerback money.
Yeah,
and
I loved how Trey played last year.
I did
the entire season.
Yeah, and he's become a really good tackler.
Yep,
I think he's become one of the more consistent tacklers that we have on the outside. I think he's become one of the more consistent cover guys we've had.
Don't you like Hughes inside more than outside?
And
I bring it up like this because McKenzie jumped out of his skin last year.
He did.
Maybe we're missing something here with a potential corner trade, and maybe they float McKenzie because they want to use Hughes on the inside.
Because they have two slot cornerbacks right now who both look like they're capable cornerbacks.
Yeah.
And you can't get anything for Hughes coming off an ACL. You could get a lot from McKenzie Alexander right now.
Yeah, but we haven't seen enough of Hughes on the outside. I mean,
no.
It was practice
right.
All week on the outside and
hush
ends
tones.
Up having to come inside.
Hush tones. You know what's funny when we're talking about all of this trading stuff and how desperately we need an offensive lineman and backup quarterback? Those at the PEN, the Patriots Entertainment Network, they keep looking at us like, boy, what is it like
exhausting.
To have to worry about things year after year after year after year? I mean, it's just amazing.
You wait, they're going to be there in a couple years.
Ben, great job.
Yeah,
pleasure doing the shows with you. Charge, great job
thank
as
you.
Usual. Nordo, likewise for you. Thank
Cheers.
You, Joe Perovich, David Whiting, Whiting Clinic, LASIK and Cataract. Our friends with the Vikings Entertainment Network, thank you very much for your support. And you can watch a lot back of what we do at KFAN.com and Vikings.com. I'm Paul Allen from Indianapolis. Talk to you next week, 9 to noon. Have a good day.
Ain't we lucky we got them? Good times.
To listen back to a podcast of today's show, visit the Paul Allen Channel on the iHeartRadio app or go to KFAN.com.